In the year of hindsight, we find ourselves with non-news and weird news. Would it surprise you to hear that Sony is ramping up more supply of PlayStation 5s? Can you have more when you're already making many? Shrug. Also, Microsoft Flight Simulator's physical edition is coming on 10 DVDs because Blu-ray won the war, but hasn't proliferated outside of devices that connect to your TV. Tonight, your hosts, Rob Roberts, Jamie Summers, and Loki, bring you news that would require 3 audio CDs to hold. Starting right now on the show, where every gamer has a voice.
There on the internet. Welcome back to another week of the show where every gamer has a voice. It is Orange Lounge Radio live once again tonight with episode number 828 for this July the 19th of 2020. My name is Rob Roberts, joining you live from our studio in Sacramento, California, where we would all collaborate usually over the last 18 years in the same room. But due to the way things are in the world, we're doing a little bit of social distant recording thanks to the magic of Discord. So I'm here, and joining me on Discord, say hello to Dark Sakura or Jamie Summers.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I don't know. Maybe I should make it a little bit more obvious. I am protecting myself from the plague. I have my plague mask shoved with I don't have rosemary in it right now. But
I do. So you're showing off your mask on Twitch because even though this is a radio podcast,
people can screenshot it.
Yeah, that's true. We do tape live.
And it's low because I've got this damn mask on.
We do tape live every Sunday night at the Voice of Geeks Network, twitch.tv/VOG Network, Sunday nights at 6 o'clock Pacific, 9 o'clock Eastern, right after the Bobby Blackwolf show. So if you do want to see some of the video, you can join us live or you can subscribe to us over at VOG Network. And yeah, I guess the elaborate mask that you're wearing is impacting some of the audio, but I think we got that now.
I folded the mask under now, so that should be a little bit better.
Oh yeah, that sounds better to me.
So you get the top down view without me covering my mouth. Ta-da.
Ta-da.
I feel now like I should actually have like a Gatchaman helmet on instead. Just call me June the Swallow.
Some of the comments from our chat room over at twitch.tv/VOG Network, SSG100 Matt says the mask protects her from the haters. Tiger Claw says she should take that mask to work. Imagine how the coworkers would react. But you're working from home right now.
I work from home.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, this arrived the day after because I had to go in and clean out my desk at work, which means it's all official now. If I had this yesterday, I would. Well, the day that I went, I would have worn it, but it actually arrived yesterday. So, oh well.
Was that a friend online who made that?
Yeah, my friend Amber did.
Nice. And for those that aren't able to see the video, it's kind of like a space type of thing, but it's, again, it's the old school type of plague mask with the big beak. So Dark Sakura kind of looks like Bird Sakura tonight.
There is a picture on my Twitter from yesterday, so.
There you go. Good way to.
You got to go hunting for it.
Good way to get the cheap plug in for the Twitter there.
And my Instagram at Dark Sakura.
Questbuster in chat says she's ready to treat medieval patients. That's right.
I'm going to give them cocaine.
She's also ready to greet people who misbehave in our chat room tonight. Any random Twitch trolls, beware. Speaking of trolls, also.
I never get trolled.
Also say hello, joining us every week here on the show. Say hello to Techmaster Loki.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing fine.
And I see tonight you've got some, is that Minecraft going on behind you, like an elaborate?
Yes, and this is actually B-roll that I recorded just before the show of my actual server. So
look at
this
you.
So this is all of the stuff that I've built.
I thought you were actually like playing. The way you were kind of looking, I thought you might be like actually playing Minecraft right now while doing the show.
Technically, yes, I was playing Minecraft at the time to record that. So this is like, for example, the second or third floor in my basement with the automatic sorting system.
Okay.
That's all redstone that I've built. But I'll be scrolling. It'll be just showing kind of the stuff that I've built over the course. I think it's like 15 minutes long. It'll just be looping.
Wow. All right. Well, it looks fancy for Minecraft. It looks pretty cool.
It's been a few months, so it's pretty fancy now.
All right. Well, let's get into some news tonight. Of course, Minecraft is a Microsoft property now, and we know we're going to be getting a lot of Microsoft news coming up this week. And in advance of that, we have some other little details that have come out kind of in advance of the show on the 23rd. Although we do know on the and Loki, I'll ask you to recap these stories here in a minute. But what we do know on the 23rd is that we're not going to get a price. We're not going to get a date for the system. So they've already kind of set our expectations there. You know, Sony didn't. Why should they, right? So we're not going to get either of those. But we will get games. So I imagine a new Halo kind of deep dive. Hopefully something Forza, either mainline, Horizon, or maybe a new thing for Forza. Who knows? And then I imagine we're getting maybe Fable. That's always the big rumor, is that Fable's coming back. One of the studios is working on Fable. That would be pretty cool. And then who knows? We know Microsoft has acquired many, many studios over the past couple of years. I think it was something like 13 studios, places like Double Fine and stuff, right? So we know Microsoft has been acquiring these studios, and we're going to find out this week what most of them likely have been working on, or at least a good chunk of them. We probably won't get to see them all, although that would be pretty impressive if they all had something. But imagine we'll see a good chunk of them, and that's to get everybody hyped, really, especially with Sony, you know, coming right off of some big exclusives on their system, right? Sony has, they just released Ghosts of Tsushima this week, which is doing really well as far as like a lot of the reviews and things people are saying online. They also, of course, have Last of Us 2, which as I guess controversial as that game is, it seems like mostly critics kind of agree it's pretty good. Just a lot of controversies and kind of like where the story went, I suppose. But, you know, in God of War, Horizon, Sony's got a lot of great, great IPs. So it's going to be interesting to see now Microsoft really kind of show what they're going to offer to really go against that. Meanwhile, Nintendo's over here putting out a new Mario game this week and kind of doing their own thing. And, you know, that's what's worked for them. Anyway, other big news, though, about Microsoft ahead of their event. I can't really say press conference, because that's what it would have been if this was an E3 world.
Yeah,
but I guess
it's like our online direct, if you will.
Virtual event on the 23rd.
Yeah, so they announced, of course, that they're going to be wrapping up the production on the Xbox One X, which makes sense because you have the Xbox Series X coming out. But they're already have stopped production on that. So that's to be expected with the brand new version that's going to kind of replace it anyways. Or possibly something else that's unannounced yet that may replace it. So we'll have to wait and see. Along with that, other cool stuff, Game Pass Ultimate now is going to be getting the Project X Cloud support. So that's going to be included with the price of Game Pass, which is pretty cool. So $15 a month, you get all that with Xbox Live together. And then, of course, there's rumors that they may be just getting rid of Xbox Live Gold altogether, because already SKUs have been taken off of the Xbox website, where you cannot purchase a year subscription to Xbox Live Gold anymore. So you can only purchase 3 months or 1 month. So I'm wondering if maybe at the end of the year they're just going to kick off Gold altogether and maybe replace it with something else. Perhaps, you know, this Xbox Games Pass, it'll just be the one fee and you get it, you know, all of the services under that one.
If only anyone could have potentially saw this coming 3 years ago. Although I don't I saw that eye roll. I could say
it's so unlikely. We'll see what happens. I mean, because it could be that they're just replacing it with the Xbox this Games Pass thing. So it would be pretty cool, because if that's the case, then it's kind of like, you know, whereas they were giving away, oh yeah, one or two free games a month or whatever, now you're getting like 100 games total. You know, they're going to be rolling new titles into it each month. It's going to be interesting to see what they do with that. I know that's why they're kind of keeping, you know, their cards close to their chest, because they don't want Sony to kind of react with their PlayStation Now. Although, let's be honest, like PlayStation Now is kind of I don't really care for it too much. Definitely the Game Pass is a lot more appealing to me. So I'm curious to see what they announce.
Yeah. SSJ100 Matt in chat says, Rob is going to pull that lever that has the banner that says, I was right. He's been waiting to pull that for 3 years. Yeah, it's just going to be a bunch of dust and balloon particles that fall from the ceiling when that happens. No, here's the thing. Okay, so I have like two mindsets about this. There is that part of me that still kind of is convinced that Microsoft may be doing this. And for those of you that are newer to OLR and don't know what I'm talking about, I said in one of the year prediction segments, beginning of the year things, about 3 years ago, I said Microsoft is going to go big and they're going to do something really shocking because they're still feeling a little sore from when they got slapped in the face by Sony at E3 all those years ago when the PlayStation 4 was first revealed, and they really sucker punched the Xbox One. And so Microsoft is just waiting to sucker punch Sony and say, well, we're going to get rid of the price to pay online. And I've kind of given these reasons for it, is that Xbox, PC, they're trying to come closer together into one environment. And isn't it really weird that if I have No Man's Sky on PC, I don't have to pay to play online? But if I have it on Microsoft Xbox, I do have to pay to play it online, even though we have cross-platform now? Like, aren't those types of things weird?
So what I could definitely see them doing to keep parity with the PC side is just charge for Games Pass and the X Cloud service, and then do Xbox Live for free, basically.
Okay. So I'm still a couple mindsets. Yeah, exactly. Is that I think they could still make Xbox Live free and go that way, and that would be a huge shocker in the industry. And you know, the thing I would have gotten wrong was that I would have predicted Microsoft to do it mid-cycle for Xbox One to get the leg up on PlayStation. What I would have gotten wrong is that they've been saving it to do it at the start of a new cycle to really get the jump on the PlayStation 5. And, you know, kind of looking back, hindsight's 2020, you think about this news about Microsoft positioning all these chess pieces in interesting places and so forth. They've been setting up to go big with Xbox Series X for years. So if they do end up sucker punching Sony and saying, guess what, online is now free, then that's going to be, you know, a huge thing, and it's going to be a huge plus in Microsoft's hat, especially when rumor is, and this is a big rumor, but a lot of, you know, even like investor articles online are saying that you can expect that Microsoft's console is going to cost less than Sony's console. So all those things are going to add up to something very, very, very interesting. Now, all that being said about the whole why I might be right camp, there is still that critical, you know, having watched this industry for years and years and doing this show, there's that other side of me, it's a little more realistic, that thinks this is more of a branding type of thing, is that it's too confusing to have Game Pass Ultimate, an xCloud Pass, and Games with Gold, all these separate, you know, tickets that are separate. It's too much to keep track of. Now, granted, Loki just said, they just announced this week that xCloud and Game Pass Ultimate are going to be tied together, so you're not going to have to worry about, like, what is it? But isn't it interesting that they didn't say Xbox Gold is that, too? So right. That almost makes me wonder. It kind of goes back to, oh, maybe I'm right again, because they didn't call that out, and why wouldn't they have if that's the direction they're going?
Yeah, I don't think, though, that they're just rebranding it, because if that was the case, then they would just still have the subscription up. They would just say, okay, well, after this date, we're just calling it something different. I think that they're just changing up how they actually, you know, sell it. So I guess I don't know what's going to happen. If you purchase so many years of Xbox Live Gold, maybe they'll just convert that over into Games Pass or something like that. We'll have to wait until Thursday this week.
Dark Soccer, let me pick on you for a minute here. Well, not pick on you, but I want your opinion from somebody who specifically is probably not really a Microsoft person. Like, I don't think you and Dan even have an... I don't remember. Do you guys even have an Xbox? I don't think you do.
Since Xbox 360.
Okay, so you've been in Microsoft's camp before, but it would be fair to say of Sony, Nintendo, and Microsoft, Microsoft's getting the least amount in your house, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
We don't feel too much love for it.
And I would imagine a lot of that is the games, right? It's just not the, you know, you've made your feelings on Halo known on this show before and so forth. It's not, the games are not tickling your fancy, so to speak.
Nothing interesting enough yet to really make it worth it to me.
Right. So, I mean, I feel like Dark Soccer is the type of gamer that Microsoft, like Phil Spencer, sees Dark Soccer and goes, that's who I need to bring back to Microsoft. So that being said, when I talk about this potential that, oh, Microsoft might get rid of the fee to pay online, does that excite you at all? Or is it just kind of like a
no?
Okay.
No. I show me the games.
Fair enough.
I don't care if they're free. I want good games.
Fair enough. No, that's an excellent point. It's just, it's really about the games. So, okay. Yeah. And all this new, you know, well, granted, everything is really speculation. And the little news that's come out was not in the context of a press conference or direct or anything. It's just, you know, kind of leaking. I don't want to say leaking, but like comments to game journalist blogs and things like that, Twitter posts. And that's where a lot of this is coming out right now. So, you know, to your credit in that point, Dark Sakura, July 23rd, here comes the games. So I'm really interested to hear your take on what happens after this week. And if anything comes out of that where you go, ooh, we'll see.
The other thing, too, is why am I going to buy a system when me playing The Last of Us is the first time I've touched my PS4 since last year. Except to dust it a couple of times. So it's, if I haven't been touching that and I really like the system, what makes me going to touch, get an Xbox One just to do, you know, I'm not going to pay money to do something that I'm probably just going to let sit there anyway and not care about. So.
Well, and the fact that you do a lot of gaming on PC, Mac, computers, you're using computers in place of consoles.
I've really been Switch a lot lately. Okay. I haven't done, the only gaming I've really done on any computer has been on my Mac, and it's been, I mean, just my puzzle games and a few like typography based games, so stuff on Apple Arcade really. Although, yeah, I've been mentioning I am going to stream for charity once I get, you know, everything put together from the house. So,
I voted for the game that didn't win. I voted for Colonel Sanders, didn't win.
Well, I had to do a new poll because Dream Daddy and Hot to Full Boyfriend tied.
I also voted for Colonel Sanders, so yeah.
Fuck my drag, right? All right. Anyway.
Okay, Mayhem.
Hype Mayhem in chat says, I think that was a Kennedy Davenport line too. Hype Mayhem says, even when I was strictly a con, Bobby voted for Colonel Sanders too. All the VOG people voted for Colonel Sanders. Hype Mayhem says, even when I was strictly a console gamer, the 360 was my secondary console. PC is my main thing right now, although I do fire up my 360 every now and then. I'm very curious to see on the 23rd how much PC is a win for Microsoft. And what I mean by that is the emphasis, is there going to be, how much emphasis is there going to be on Xbox Series X? We know we're not getting the system. We know we're not getting the date. So I'm curious to see how many times the message is reiterated coming to PC and Xbox, or this is something you can play on PC. And let's be real, it's Microsoft. So they're going to say Windows. It'd be a lot of Windows 10. It's a Windows 10 game because it's Microsoft. That's what they're going to do. So,
whoopty shit.
I know, but so let's be real. That's what they're going to do. Go ahead, Logan.
So here's what I don't understand about xCloud. So this is just my not doing any research on it. So xCloud, is that streaming from your Xbox to your phone, or is that like, say, just any other game streaming service where it's just from the cloud to you, whatever device that you want to stream to? Because if it doesn't require a console, I would love to have xCloud support for my PC to be able to play these games that I don't have a console for.
Great question, and one I'm hoping we get more clarity on the 23rd, because I think the branding with xCloud is kind of confusing. I think the fact that we don't have a definitive, like, this is the answer to that, and I'm sure you guys in chat, you know, and as far as I know, the Project xCloud that's been tested is your Xbox streaming to your device. Like a phone or something like that, or even, I suppose, your PC, which is something you've been able to do for a long time, really, is stream your Xbox One to your PC. But I do think that's a message that Microsoft could stand to kind of clarify a little bit. Like, what is xCloud? Is it gaming from the cloud to your Xbox, or is it all of it? Like, what's the difference? How does one work versus another? And I think there's going to be a lot when it comes to like branding and how they show that off that's going to be important. And I know a lot of you guys are probably sitting there ready to explain it to me in technical fashion how it all works, and I get that. But remember, we got to explain this to the average consumer. We got to explain this to the parent that's shopping for the household, or hell, the the college kid that's buying their own console or whatever it is. You know, it's got to be explaining it a little more to that audience, especially around the holiday season. Explain to grandma why why Microsoft xCloud makes it better.
So according to the actual official page, is that, and this is just for the test, it says test streaming console quality titles from the cloud. No waiting for downloads. During the preview, you don't need to own games or a console. So it is right now streaming just from the cloud, not from a console. I'm curious if it's going to stay that way.
Maybe I didn't even know.
Maybe it could stay that way for like everything else out of, you know, the Games Pass stuff.
It says a lot that I was convinced it was your console to your phone, and I swear that's something they've also been testing. And fine, I'm happy to be wrong because it just proves my point. Like, we kind of need clarity on what is it and how does it work and how easy is it going to be, you know, and that whole thing.
Yeah.
So, all right. SS2100 Matt says, there is a Reddit thread where people ask folks to explain certain things like they're 12. I thought it was 5. Isn't there a subreddit,
yeah,
ELI5 or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, there's probably a 12-year-old one, too. The way you'd word things to a 12-year-old and a 5-year-old are a little different. But still, yeah, that's what Microsoft needs to do with xCloud. ELI12. That's what it is. So, all right. Anyway, Loki, are you getting hyped about this event? Are you kind of lukewarm on Microsoft?
I'm always hyped about game information. So, yes, of course. Yeah.
I got to say, I love Sony and I love PlayStation 5. I almost am more excited about Microsoft this time around. And I think it has something to do with their underdog status. You know, the reality is, y'all, I love games so much, I'm going to buy both. I'm going to buy both. That's just the way it is. But there's a certain like underdog element, and you know, this is Phil Spencer's time as opposed to, you know, Don Matrick, who kind of screwed the Xbox One right out the gate. Like, I'm really just excited to see like what it is and how they're going to get that messaging across, and I'm kind of really excited about it, to be honest. So,
and I still don't know what their exclusives are though between the different platforms. So that's why right now I'm like having a hard time making decisions, because like, I don't know what they're offering. Like, they keep saying, oh, our hardware is more powerful. I mean, every company is going to say that. So, like, I need to see what the games are. And I'm not clear, like, especially after that last event that Sony had. Like, I'm not clear what games they're offering. It was all third-party stuff. And, like, yeah, Assassin's Creed is going to be on both platforms, and I don't care about that game anyways. I just don't know third-party-wise. Like, I would lean a little bit towards Sony just because I have a huge library of stuff on there. But I mean, with Games Pass, it doesn't matter anyway. So like, I have to see what they have to offer, like exclusive wise, because that's really kind of what drives me to one console or the other.
If Sony would really go big on the backwards compatibility thing, I would be so happy. And I know people are like, why do you need a new console to play old games? Because I ran out of shelf space for the old consoles. The old consoles get dusty and die. I don't even know where the freaking cords are for my old consoles at some point. Like, it's kind of nice to have it all in one. And I got to be honest, if Sony does open up and say, guess what? All those PlayStation 2 and 3 and 1 games that have been sitting on your shelf, now they have value again. You can play them on your 5. I'll be so excited, to be honest. So, we'll see.
SSJ100 Matt says, we won't notice a difference between the console power for a few years, and by then studios will be able to use the console to its full potential. We're never going to know which console is better anyways, because what's going to happen, especially when it comes to mainline games that are multi-platform, they're going to keep them in parity with each other. You're not going to have one that's like vastly different than the other one. It's going to be first party titles that would be showing that stuff off, and honestly, I don't think it's going to be like night and day between these different consoles.
Yeah.
I think it's just all hype and, you know, advertise speak.
I think that's a very important point, is that technical power does not mean what it used to mean. Case in point, Nintendo. I rest my case. Like, Nintendo has the weakest console out there from a technological, although some would argue the technological marvel of the dock and taking it off the dock is a pretty big feather in the hat. But you guys know what I mean, right? Technically, the Switch is going to be the least powerful thing on the market. But does it matter? No, it absolutely doesn't matter, because they have Animal Crossing. they have a Metroid game coming out in the future. They likely are doing another Mario game this holiday of some form or another. It's not going to matter. So, like, you know, whereas back in the day when it was, you know, Super Nintendo or Nintendo 64 on a cartridge versus PlayStation on a disc versus Dreamcast, you know, all this stuff going on, like, the technological end of it doesn't matter anymore. If that makes sense. So
yeah, it makes sense.
Phoenix 7726 in chat says, Rob, power has never meant the same thing to Nintendo, even when they are on the edge during the GameCube era. Yeah, that's a brilliant point. The GameCube was probably the closest they ever got to kind of being on par with the other consoles that were available at the time. But well, even then, their online was so weak compared to the competition.
The thing that's going to hurt them, though, power-wise, I mean, I get it, the Switch is an okay system. It's just that when you're looking at third-party titles, you're going to have... The Switch is not going to be able to run a lot of these modern engines on it. It's not without them massively altering those games. That's why you see a lot of these older games being ported to the Switch, which is fine. But you're not going to see, like, you know, Cyberpunk running on the Switch or something like that. It's going to be very much separate... in that sense. Same with, like, you know, Madden or anything like that. You know, these next gen Madden games, they're gonna have it all is gonna be porting that old version of Madden onto the Switch over and over and over again with a roster update.
Counterpoint though, because Microsoft is still developing for the Xbox One. Everything that is being developed is going to run on the Xbox One. So that being said, it's not going to be as difficult. I mean, I say that like I have any technical knowledge of programming a game whatsoever, but I think that bridge would be a lot less strenuous to cross from Xbox One to Switch than it would be from PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X. And we know a couple years, Microsoft is still going to be supporting Xbox One. Third party could be a different story. I understand that. But I think that bridge is not as monumental as it might have felt before, especially with the way the Switch is sold. It's motivating third party developers to kind of keep it in mind when they develop. Now, in a couple years, when Microsoft finally decides to leave the Xbox One behind, I think that's when the conversations will start really about what is the Switch's successor, which I full on just expect to be a Switch 2.0. I don't see Nintendo leaving this formula behind at all. Like, it's going to be another portable and desktop, I don't know, a living room system. Nintendo's not going to leave that behind. It's been too damn successful this time around. So. All right.
I think there's just a lot of even stuff with the current generation of consoles that doesn't come to the Switch because it can't run that stuff. Although now it's going to be running Crysis, so I guess anything's possible.
SSG100 Matt in chat says, Loki going after sports games again. But he's right. The last year or two of sports games on an expiring consoles are just really sad ports. Yeah.
That's what they've been the last few years already on the Switch. Nothing's going to change. Nothing. All of a sudden, them making a brand new engine that runs on next generation of consoles doesn't mean all of a sudden they're going to port it to... It's not going to happen.
But that's up to the third parties to do better in some regard, too, because Nintendo's doing great. All right. Anyway, let's move on. Let's talk about the types of games we've been playing this week, whether it's been on our Switch, our computer, our Xbox, PlayStation, whatever. How was your gaming week? And we'll start with Dark Sakura. How was your gaming week?
It was all right. I played a lot of Animal Crossing. Dan's been playing Bloodstained. He's actually been playing both Curse of the Moon 2 and then the regular Bloodstained. I've been playing this stupid game that I'm kind of hooked on. And it's one of those, like, free with ads stupid games, but the ads aren't very long on it. And it's, if people can see what it looks like, it's like this, where you get, like, letters.
Okay, for the podcast folks, it looks like a Words with Friends, but with a spinny dial thing.
It's the word wheel mode from Words with Friends is what it is.
Oh, okay.
And so, of course, you know, you have to build the words on it. And me, like, on this one, I've guessed 3 of the words on the puzzle, and I've done 33 other words. The last one I did was, like, 9 words, and I guessed 70. So... yeah, and they were all real words. So I'm like, yeah, this game isn't for people who actually have a vocabulary. It's been pretty fun. I'm still playing Words with Friends. I haven't really gotten to much of The Last of Us this week just because other things are going on. But I
this upcoming week isn't going to be much better because I get my new desk and have to set up my office and everything. So this, all of this behind me is going to be different, hopefully, the next time I'm on the show.
Awesome.
But in other news, next week is my last half show. I go back to my old schedule and you get me for a full show.
I'm glad the warden's giving you a pardon so we can have y'all show. Good to know.
I don't know how I feel about closing again, though. I've kind of gotten used to my quiet 6 a.m., but it is what it is.
Yeah, you'll do fine. All right. Well, if that's it for your gaming week, we'll move to Loki, who clearly Minecraft was part of his week.
Yes, I'm always playing Minecraft. So played lots of Minecraft, and aside from that, Orna, and then also I did finally get the Switch to play a little bit of Paper Mario, the Origami King. So that was pretty awesome. I'm enjoying that quite a bit. So just not too far into it. Yeah, I'm not to like the first big boss yet, but I played like 3 hours of it. It was pretty good. So that's pretty much it.
Okay. All right, my gaming week. I have a lot to talk about, actually. So there's all the usuals, right? Like, you know, Pokemon Go. I got like 11 shinies during community day, catching for my Bluetooth, you know, whatever. But I got a 100% Ghastly, and those are more exciting to me when you get a perfect 100%. Because they give out shinies like candy on community day, I swear. But yeah, so I participated in that. Go me. I'm still playing Orna a bit. And this was a week where I was kind of like, I'm going to tackle some games that have just been sitting in my backlog, or, you know, just play something random on Xbox Game Pass. So I played on Xbox Game Pass. They just added a game called Forager. And Loki, this might be something that's up your alley because it is very Minecrafty, especially when it comes to the crafting in the game. But the graphics look a little more like, honestly, to me, they're almost like a Binding of Isaac style graphics. Although the game is nothing like Binding of Isaac. It's more Minecraft, but it's 2D, and you know, you're going around, you mine these different things, you have things that you build, like a forage, and you do other things like a thread, a loom, things like that, and you're kind of crafting, and then you expand your land through money, and you're crafting money as well. And so it's an interesting kind of 2D Minecraft. And I suppose we've seen these types of games before. Maybe Don't Starve would be another good comparison, although I feel like Forager was like really, really dumbed down. And that's a good thing. I think that's an okay thing to be sometimes. Sometimes being a simpler game gives you an edge. That's why I love Heroes of the Storm. It's like League of Legends, but it's dumbed down, and that's not a bad thing. So Forager's pretty cool in that regard. I wish it had had a little bit more robust of a tutorial. Like, it sometimes the little dude will tell you like what to do, but I was kind of having a hard time figuring out, like, am I doing this the right way? Am I eating the right things that I'm supposed to be eating? Because this seems very difficult and I'm running out of life very often. I guess maybe I need to build more fish traps. I don't know. That type of discovery might be a plus for some people, though. I like to be handheld just a little bit more in the beginning of the game. But that's really just it's a minor piece of feedback, all things considered. I think the game is fun. It's interesting. And I feel like it moves at a faster pace than Minecraft too, which I kind of like. So, yeah, that's cool. Some other games I've been playing. Epic Game Store. I'm like, you know, I've been collecting all these free games. I'm going to play some free games. So I played one called Lifeless Planet. That I think came out was a free game a couple weeks ago. I think the game itself dates back to like 2014 or something like that. And I thought it might be kind of like a No Man's Sky type of game because that was the vibe that a lot of the screenshots were giving me. It's not quite that open world. It's a little more platformy. I would almost call it a little bit more like an old school Tomb Raider type of thing is honestly how it kind of felt to me with some of the puzzles where it's like, oh, I got to take a ball and roll the ball over to this cliff so I can jump on the ball and jetpack up here and do these types of things. It has kind of an interesting story to it, too. It was okay. I thought... The game kind of wasn't what I expected it would be. Like, I thought a game like Lifeless Planet would be very much about exploration and kind of open worldness, and that's not really what this is at all. But that doesn't make it bad. It's just it wasn't what I expected. So there you go. Now you can set your expectations appropriately if you ever play this game, which I got on Epic Game Store a while ago. And it's, you know, again, many of you guys probably picked it up for free. It's worth a look. It's pretty neat. I also played a game. Everybody knows this game, Celeste. I finally got around to playing Celeste. This week. Because that was on Epic Game Store at some point. That game is hard as hell. My God. But it's fun. It has like a Super Meat Boy vibe kind of going with it. And that's kind of what it reminds me of closest. But the soundtrack's really good. And
yes, it is.
I like how I like it and I don't like it. I like it how there's these little strawberries that very clearly are things you're supposed to be collecting that are like dangled in front of you, but they're hard as hell to get. And like, I can get them sometimes, but other times, nope, can't do it. And I just have to move on. And then sometimes there's choices. Do I go left or right? And I don't know. Like, I thought games like this only had one path, but no, there's multiple ways to get there. So that's kind of interesting where it's like a Super Meat Boy-esque type of game, but there's multiple ways to kind of get to the finish. So, yeah, I thought that was interesting. Some comments in chat on these games. ActDef says, Celeste is so awesome. It's hard, but it's so rewarding. And the story is great. And Pele Hanumea talking about Lifeless Planet was interesting to play. Yeah, it's interesting. The story is kind of not what I expected it to be at all, but it's very narrative, but it's good. Let's see. I think that's about like my newer games I was playing and catching up. Okay, so I mentioned on Twitter that like I have found this new thing in one of my games that I play a lot that I really enjoy. Some of you might find it a little weird, and that's why I'm going to talk about it openly and publicly on this show that I do. So obviously you guys know I play a lot of a game called Ingress, right? So something they just recently did in Ingress is they released something called portal scanning. And what portal scanning is quite simply all you're doing, you're taking like you take your camera and you walk around like a portal, basically, where it is. And you're taking a 3D scan of that portal for Niantic's database to be used in some other game down the road. Now, this same feature is in Pokemon Go, but it's Pokestop scanning. I think it's a little more hidden and they don't give you any rewards for it. There's like no reason to do it in Pokemon Go. So I doubt any of you are, except maybe the curiosity factor. But in Ingress, they have some little badges, you know, little achievements that you can get from doing these things. And so that kind of motivated me to start taking a look. I was like, well, at least I can do this bronze level, you know, achievement and do this. And they did one badge for scanning portals. But then they released a second badge called Scout Controller. This is very different than Pokemon. And what Scout Controller is that Scout Controller is for uniques, basically. Like, if you have more portal scans than anybody else on a portal, then you are the Scout Controller for 30 days. Now, if somebody comes and scans more than you, they'll take it away from you. But you've already stamped that as a unique Scout Controller claim, so it goes towards your badge. So this added up to, and there's a point I'm getting to here. This added up to me trying to find portal dense areas to just scan a lot of things. And so I could work on my controller badge really fast. And I'm already up to, I got the bronze level. I'm past 100. I'm up to about 150 unique portals because I've been going to dense areas. Parks, I found, I was scanning at parks, but right now there's a lot of kids at parks. There's a lot of asshole teenagers at parks because people, yeah, there's not a lot to do in quarantine right now, but go outside and go to parks. So it's hard for me to be like, I'm going to take out my phone and like pretend like I'm not taking pictures of your kid. I promise I'm taking pictures. It's too weird for me and I don't want to go there. So where do you think the portal dense area is that I found where I don't get bothered by anybody?
And graveyards.
Graveyards. That is exactly right. And so let me actually roll some B-roll of me doing a portal scan at a graveyard.
At a graveyard.
And I got to tell you, you know what's fun about it? Is that the location doesn't – so you can see sorry, I'm going to narrate for the podcast folks. You can see – I see where the – let me actually start. I'm sorry. I was a bad narrator. I'm going to start the B-roll again. So you see – it shows me a picture of what the grave looks like and the name on it. I've got to find it. And the location isn't always accurate. And that's the fun part,
is I kind of have to play Where's Waldo a little bit. So now in the video, okay, I found the portal, I found the grave marker that was in the picture, and so I start to actually scan. So this is me walking around the portal, and you see it actually kind of, and never mind the Pokemon Go messages, because that's me catching via Bluetooth. But I walk around the portal best I can, although obviously I'm not going to walk up. I'm not going to be disrespectful to the graveyard itself. So I do the best that I can, and then it actually encodes it. And then it sends the data to Niantic so that Pikachu can pop out of that gravestone at some point in Pokemon Go, I imagine. So you see it actually like replays it to you. It shows a little scan that I took, and there it goes. I do upload later, and then I actually upload those scans when I get home at some point later on. So that's basically what it looks like. So again, the fun part is I'm having to use clues in the picture because graveyards, right, there's tons of gravestones. But you want to make sure you're scanning the right thing, right? So I have to use clues like in the picture. What is the grave shape like? Does it have a cross on top of it? Or does it have like some of them have a drapery? Does it have a torch? Like what, like things are on it? What color is it? I see a tree in the background because again, the location is not always accurate in a graveyard. People like submit it like close, but it's very hard in Niantic system with Pokemon Go and Ingress. Like you see a satellite view of where the portal's supposed to be. You can't find that unless it's one of those giant tombs, which sometimes there's that as well. It's very hard to find that on satellite view. So a lot of these things are in the wrong place. So yeah, that's and I had a lot of fun doing that today. And now I'm like, oh, I want to go to all these other places and scan too, because they're the best things to scan. Like, you know, when you're scanning like plaques on a wall and stuff, they're not very interesting. They don't really have a lot of shape to them. But gravestones are like kind of awesome for that. And again, nobody fucking bothers me at a graveyard at all. Like, it's great. I saw one other person there today, and I'm pretty sure they were taking the gyms in Pokemon Go is what they were doing. It was also, and I, you know, and as weird as y'all might think it is or whatever, like, I'm completely respectful when I do this. I make sure I'm not walking in places that feel disrespectful. I don't make noise. I don't, you know, I don't jump on things. So what, quite honestly, and one thing I found through this, because games like Pokemon Go and Ingress and all these Niantic things and cell phone games are also about exploring your community, right? That's a big thing that they've always pitched, right? Right, Loki? Is like, explore your community, get to know your community. You know one thing I learned? This graveyard sucks at upkeep. And I was actually kind of distressed about it. I was like, if my relative was buried at the cemetery, I would be so upset by the state of this. All of the none of the grass had been kept. It was all dead. California hasn't been in a drought for a couple years, so I don't know what their excuse is on that front. They get at least water at once in a while, so all the grass was dead. I saw tombs that were completely, like had fallen over just out of, like, disrepair. There was one, I put a picture on my Instagram that was just, like, something that had fallen over into three pieces. And I was like, "This, what if this was my relative? This is distressful." So there's almost a part of me that's like, this game might turn me into an activist of some sort, where I'm like, y'all are paying good money for, you know, this type of care and to memorialize your relatives and so forth. I bet if some people saw the state of disrepair this place was in, they'd be shocked. So I don't know. Maybe I need to start an Instagram or a Yelp or something like that. I don't know. So Bobby Blackwolf in chat says the Undertaker would take care of that graveyard. Yeah. Bobby Blackwell says Rob has 5G. Okay, but that's the fake 5G. That's the it's look very carefully. It's 5GE. That's my AT&T 5G. Okay, it's very different. It's not actual 5G. Let's see other comments in chat here. Questbuster says Rob is going to end up on the 11 o'clock news as part of the graveyard horde story. I don't know. Phoenix 7726 says so Pikachu's a grave digger. LOL. I mean, that's what I assume it's for Pokemon Go and some type of AR feature. But we also know Niantic's working on Catan. I don't know what type of AR stuff would be in Catan. But at the same time, I would have never foresaw what AR stuff would have been in Pokemon. So who knows? Maybe when you build things in Catan, because that is Niantic's next game, that's out there, and you can sign up for the beta now. I don't know. They might implement it in their Harry Potter game. I keep forgetting. I kind of stopped on Harry Potter Wizards Unite. I just, I,
I think that's Orna's fault, because I have found the maximum number of those games I can play at once is 3. I cannot play more than 3 GPS games at once. So I finally left Wizards Unite by the wayside. And I don't know, maybe the Traces will do something with the AR. I don't know. So, interesting. Anyway, so yeah, that's my interesting new obsession is scanning graveyards. It's good exercise. I get my steps in. There's no children running around acting crazy and no parents going like, why is that creepy dude with his phone trying to take pictures of my kid? I would much rather somebody just be like, why is that dude taking pictures in a graveyard? Because honestly, I think there's a lot of people, graveyards are meant to be good looking. They're meant to be beautiful. They're meant to be eternal resting spots of sorts. That's why I was so irritated with this one I went to today and the state of disrepair it was in. I was like, if I was buried here, I'd be so mad. And I don't think what I'm doing is disrespectful either. Like it's a way to memorialize or if I pass away, you guys, suddenly and unexpectedly, I know this is a morbid thing to talk about, but I should talk about it. If I should pass away unexpectedly and quickly, absolutely I want to become a Pokestop and a portal. So whether it's a bench with my name on it or whatever, absolutely that is how I want to be remembered. So, all right. Phoenix7726 in chat says, Rob, are you going through an elder emo phase of sorts? I mean, I was always a little emo. And ActDeft in chat says, you're not wrong, Rob, at all. No. Thank you. That's my favorite phrase. All right. Anyway, enough of my gaming week. I just had to talk about that a little bit. Let's actually get into some gaming news and some other things that have happened around the gaming world this week. Sorry, I'm reading some more comments in chat. Chronos Ode in chat says, cemeteries are some of my favorite places to go for peace and quiet. Exactly that. Like, people don't bother me. They don't look at me funny. Like, everybody's kind of minding their business.
I used to have picnics in cemeteries.
That's, and you know what?
And we would do gravestone rubbings with chalk and paper.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Yeah.
Oh, that's really neat. I mean, we were the gothy kid.
Yeah. I mean, and I don't find myself being disrespectful. I mean, if I was making noise and screaming and dancing and knocking things over like somebody clearly did in this place, there's graffiti too. I don't do that stuff. Let's see. Bobby Blackwolf in chat says, put on your tombstone, dear resistance, keep this portal. Hell no. Forever green. All right. Anyway, I suppose there's some people on resistance I like, and I suppose if they wanted to visit once in a while, they could. But this is very morbid, so let's move on. Let's talk about what's going on in gaming news around the industry. So, Loki, we'll start with you.
Yes. So there is a very exciting new Lego set that's been announced that is going to celebrate the 35th anniversary of the Nintendo Entertainment System. And it is a Lego Nintendo Entertainment System. So not only do you get the console, you get a controller, you get the Super Mario Brothers game cartridge, which actually does plug into the console itself, but also a retro-style TV with a crank that moves a little scene in there that you can actually move Mario up and down on as well. And then, of course, if you have the starter kit for the new Super Mario Brothers Lego sets, then you can plug that in on top and it'll play the Super Mario Brothers theme music as well. So that's coming out August 1st. It's going to run $230. But wow, does it look amazing.
Yeah, I got to say, the fact that it's a Nintendo set is cool. But even if it wasn't Nintendo, this is probably one of the most badass Lego things I've ever seen. Like, this is next level. But I can't, with that price tag, I can't. Like, not for me. But I'm not the Lego aficionado. Some of the rest of y'all are, Loki. So did you drop the money on it or trying to?
Well, they don't always pre-order sets.
Oh, so, right.
Yeah, you have to wait.
Bobby Blackwolf in chat says, I'm getting this, even at that price. Not a scalper price, though. Oh, I'm with you on that. And I would never pay a scalper price.
I'm working on Dan for it.
Are you? I was just about to ask you, because you guys do some Lego collecting, right? Just not a ton, right?
We do. We actually have like 2 Back to the Future sets, the DeLorean and 2 Ecto-1s. And I don't know, I would really want this one. But then again, we do have... other things that we need to do. So anyone want to buy a house? We're selling one.
Oh, actually, yes.
You want to live in a retirement community?
No, I don't.
Okay. Yeah.
But it's funny to say that, though. You know, we really are about to start those conversations, right? So
we may have to talk.
Yeah. But the other kind of funny thing with all that is, okay, so Bobby Blackwolf in chat is, I'm willing to pay $230 for it, not any higher. SG100 Matt says $250 was my max for it. Thankfully, it was lower. So you guys say that, $230, $250 with Lego sets, and my mind goes, I could get another arcade one-up cabinet for $200.
Dude, I'm telling you, Placerville has Pac-Man cabs for $50. They've got a few left.
My husband will divorce me if I bring another one of those in this house.
They've been just sitting there.
I still want that Star Wars one.
Those are still in Roseville.
I'm gonna be sending hubby on an errand.
Yeah,
but that's the thing though. It's like I don't like Pac-Man that much, so I'm like, nah, I can't do that.
That's the one you hack, isn't it? That's because somebody's figured out how to hack one of those cabinets.
No, they already have. I mean, they have tons of stuff. There's a whole marketplace for that stuff. But I would like something that's less that you need to modify to it. Like, for example, like a Street Fighter cab where it has 6 buttons for each player. I mean, that would be ideal. Or like the Ninja Turtles one would be pretty cool too, but those are still full price. I'll wait.
I know.
I mean, at one time, it's ridiculous. At one time, the Asteroid cabs, they were clearing them out at $1. Like, how? I don't understand how those didn't get snatched up by the employees.
I'm so upset because it's a space thing. They do take up a bit of space. Like, you can't. You know, and they're not for every type of living space. I don't even like having one in a rental. I could imagine, Loki, back when this show started, you and I used to live in an apartment. You know what? I was about to say, could you imagine us having one of those machines in the house? But then I remember in that apartment,
maybe smaller than what it was.
You had that fucking arcade cabinet that you built in that apartment.
It was enormous.
That thing was gigantic. Oh, God, I wish I had a picture of it.
It's an Ultimark arcade. I think that's what the brand was, the design was. But yeah, it was a four-player, size.
Like, wasn't our television huge in that cabinet?
Yes, the television was in the cabinet, yes.
I remember playing Dracula X on that thing.
Yeah.
We hooked up the TurboGrafx.
It's funny. All right. Anyway. all our collections and what they do to us. Let's move on. Let's talk about Cyberpunk 2077, some updates on that game this week. Obviously, the game didn't come out. But, you know, there's more interviews and things that are being done that are building more hype for the game. And a couple interesting new features, if you will, coming out about the game this week. So there was a Polish website, Spider's Web, that actually interviewed some of the folks, lead quest designer in this case for Cyberpunk 2077, talking a little bit about, you know, how the game works and the way you can play through the game. What's interesting in the interview, the lead quest designer said, all the most important choices in the game, all bosses and elite opponents, there is always a way to go without killing anyone. Sometimes aggression and fighting with an opponent is something that cannot be avoided. It is not that you have to take someone's legs or arms, but it is also not so that you can completely avoid the fight. But you are able to fight in such a way that you only neutralize your opponents and thus pass the game. So in other words, if you want to be Batman and not actually kill anybody, that's going to be an option to you in Cyberpunk. I think that's kind of interesting, the kind of like pacifist approach to play the game. It sounds like it may not be the obvious way to get through the game either. I suppose, spoiler alert, but this game is how many years old at this point? It might be something like Undertale, where the fact that there is a pacifist approach you can take in that game is not necessarily obvious at first. You know what I mean? Those of you that have played it. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of playthroughs with that, especially now that people know. I'm sure there'll be some people that are looking for it. And, of course, some people that maybe aren't into the uber violence like myself. I'm not really into uber violence. That might be an interesting approach for me to take, knowing that I don't have to dismember all these heads and things to actually win the game. So that's kind of neat. Also, on a related note with Cyberpunk 2077, also in that same interview, the game is built in such a way where you can actually complete it without necessarily getting through the main quest. A quote on that. We built the Cyberpunk structure based on the conclusions we drew from The Witcher 3. The Witcher had the main stem of history and side threads departing from it, and this was our main structure, which we call the ear. So in Cyberpunk structure, we have this wheat spike, which serves as its center, the main storyline with different subplots surrounding it, which can be triggered in various ways. Those subplots allow us to do something we've never done before. They change the main plot of the game, and they're doing that in such a way that you may not even finish the main plot, but still finish the game and get a completely different epilogue than the player with a different life path who made different choices, met different characters, and formed relationships with them. So, very interesting type of approach to the game where it sounds like it's going to be very, I mean, there's open world games and then there's like open world games. And this definitely sounds like it's going to be open in all sorts of ways that the main quest isn't even necessarily what you beat to beat the game. And I think that's kind of fascinating in a way. I have to admit, I haven't been like as excited about Cyberpunk just because I've kind of chalked it up to, it's one of those open world games I'm just not going to have the 400 hours to beat. But the more I hear about it, the more I'm kind of like, that's interesting.
I can't wait.
With it. Yeah, I know you're on there day one. I know it, but we'll see.
Can't wait.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on. Dark Sakura, I'm hoping you're still there. And you've got the next story.
Yeah, I'm here. I just went off because I don't think anyone wants to watch me eat my dinner.
I wish I had a way to turn my camera off because I was sitting here eating too, and I don't have a thing to take my camera off. Sorry.
Well, at any rate, there's also updates on the horizon for PS Now that's basically in the form of a Sony patent that was updated that included some different details. So one of those things is that they're talking about some of the services for PS Now going on to PS5 to allow older games to offer segments that work as playable demos. So they could cut up like different parts of the game and share them with other people so that they can get a feel for how the game is. Of course, there's no details about how exactly that's going to work, but it's supposed to go on PS Now. The other talk is that it could also just be for the sake of clips, but they're talking about it being something playable. The patent description states, in one embodiment, a method is provided for creating a playable limited version of a video game and executed by a user of a complete version of a video game. So that's actually kind of cool.
Yeah,
Go
ahead.
I just think it would be a really great way to share experiences with people and try to get other people to get in on some of these games. It definitely would spread the market because, I mean, how many times do we lend out demo discs and whatnot? Kind of the same.
Yeah, it's a real novel approach of kind of taking this idea of like watching a YouTube or a Twitch stream to kind of get a feel of a game. It's really kind of taking that to the next level where it's like, don't just watch this clip of the game, play this clip of the game. I think that's a really interesting approach. If that's, again, nothing is official until Sony says it's there, but if that's true, that is neat. Yeah. That's a real
like,
next generation
thing.
You
can do better. You try it.
Yeah.
It's an interesting approach that nobody seems to be interested in Stadia. So, you know,
now, Stadia's got this thing that will be out that says you can play your favorite. You'll be able to play with your favorite creator while the world watches with crowd play. So it means that people, I guess, will watch it live on YouTube. And then you can join in against like creators of the games and play versus on them. Like it's bring about Dead by Daylight and Super Bomberman R online. So
I mean that's cool and all, but what are the odds you're actually going up against the developer? Or are we talking about like essentially like a ghost racer in a game like Mario Kart or something, where like one of the developers is the ghost racer and you're playing against them? If that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
It yeah. does, or you know, you could be playing, you know, with the personal assistant of the second head of the unit. I mean, that I wouldn't mind playing with a personal assistant or anything. I'm not putting that down, but I mean, I'm just saying it's kind of it could be anybody.
It almost sounds much like the not necessarily demos, it's like special versions of the games that they put on like the Nintendo Online and the Super Nintendo Online, their little like
the BS Satellaview.
Oh, well, no, not necessarily that. I'm talking about the ones where it's like, it's a save state. That's at the end of the game with all of this, you know, all of these power ups and go play, you know, or, oh, hey, we started the game with like 100 lives and all these equipment.
It's SP. It's the SP games. Like, the Kid Icarus SP that just starts you on the last level. Or the Zelda SP that starts you with 255 rupees or something like that. I know what you're talking about. Yeah. You're right. It is kind of like that. Interesting.
But you're only getting, though, I mean, it's not like, you're at the end of the game with all this. It's like, let me send you something from the middlemost boring part of the game because I'm a good friend. Here, do all this farming. Welcome to my life.
Or like a game like Celeste, I think, is a good example, too. Like, here's, see if you can beat this random fucking hard ass room and get the strawberry that, you know, I couldn't do earlier. Here you go. Have fun. That's pretty neat. I'd be very curious what the limitations are on something like that. But it's a real rad idea.
I think so.
Yeah, I think so, too. All right.
I'm looking forward to some of these newer developments. I think the PlayStation stuff is becoming a little bit more exciting to me.
Yeah, and it's these types of things that really start to feel next gen, so to speak. Like, you know, again, from a technological perspective, you know, how many more gigaflops or whatever can we get in the consoles? I think it's really these sorts of ideas that are going to start to feel like, oh, this is the next generation of gaming. This is the next generation of sharing. It's participating. You know, it's going to be very interesting. So, all right. Well, Loki, what are my chances I'll get a PS5?
Hopefully better than they would normally be. Because apparently Sony has been ramping up production ahead of the launch of the console. And they're expecting, or at least targeting, 10 million consoles made by March 2021. So that would be within their fiscal year. I hope that's actually going to happen. And I hope that means that the console will be easier to get. And that we're not going to have to, you know, fight the black markets to get that stuff. I'm thinking that maybe, obviously, that they're going to want to try to ramp that up just in general, because I think, you know, we're still going to be in like a pandemic scenario by the time that stuff rolls around anyways. And a lot of people suck at home, got to have something to do. You know, it makes sense that you want to launch it with as many units as possible. So I hope that's actually going to be the case, and maybe, you know, that the whole COVID-19 situation doesn't affect production too much, but we'll have to wait and see, I guess. Or they maybe just not going to have a problem selling those consoles because it's going to be too damn expensive and no one's going to buy them.
Well, they're not making the consoles in this country, and they're not making them in Brazil or what's the other? Russia that's third right now? So they're not making them there. So, I mean, COVID is still a global issue, but other countries have it in control. It's really a U.S. problem right now. I mean, Brazil and other countries. But we're number one, y'all. We're number one.
All right. We're winning. It's all this winning I've been told about.
So anyway, sorry. Right? We shouldn't make light of what is really horrific. But like in this type of situation, like a morbid sense of humor is the only thing that's carrying me through right now, because otherwise I would just be so upset and angry. Let's see. DJ Rama S talking about Sony versus Microsoft in chat, saying, regardless of which console drops first, I'll be getting the Xbox Series X first. Between backwards compatibility and Game Pass, I'm sold. VG Realness in chat talking a little bit about the last story, although it all ties into PlayStation 5, says, at the same time, a feature like that doesn't seem like something that needs a new console to pull off. True. Especially because share play is already something that exists on the PlayStation 4. But since they are rebuilding the interface completely for PlayStation 5, I would say there'd be a lot to go with, you know, how seamless that is, how easy that is for them to build into that. But you are right to the extent of they could probably just build it into the PlayStation 4. But I suppose it also goes back to what we were talking about at the very beginning of the show, is that Microsoft could stop charging for gold tomorrow if they want.
But there's something very symbolic about doing it with Xbox Series X that could be very interesting if that does pan out and ends up being true. It's almost like you kind of tie that feature to the new generation, if that makes sense. So anyhow, let's move on to our next story, which is something I would like to play with backwards compatibility, even on PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X. Although, knowing this game, it will probably get a re-release on those systems and will probably have even more features because this game just won't stop. It's No Man's Sky. And No Man's Sky got yet another big update this week. And what did they add? Something called Desolation. It's a free update, as they all have been. And now you have new freighters in the game. And it's supposed to be kind of like a scary type of experience. The freighters are procedurally generated, like everything else in the game, of course. And so wherever you find one, it'll be different every time. You'll find ship logs, personal possessions, and it'll talk about what happened to the crew that used to be there. Yikes.
So they brought a little bit of Dead Space into No Man's Sky.
No Man's Sky. That's exactly right. Yeah. You might find in these places the lights are off, or the gravity is off, or the life support systems have gone wrong. There will also be biological horrors that will be there to respond to you. So that might be a little scary. What is interesting, though, is that now, if you didn't know, No Man's Sky truly is multiplayer now. So you don't have to explore these things on your own. You can do it with other people. If you really want to kick up that horror, don't forget No Man's Sky also got a VR update some time ago. So you could do this whole thing in VR if you want. If you want, underlined and italicized. But yeah, and of course, if you get through these freighters, you get big rewards that you can use on your own starship. And they say it will reflect the history of ships you've scavenged. That's kind of interesting. So, yeah, so that is yet another. And, of course, this update also comes with bug fixes and, you know, the other types of minor updates. But, as much as it's almost memeable at this point that No Man's Sky got yet another update, it is pretty awesome that this game that everybody hated right out the gate has not stopped and has remained committed to filling out that full vision, which, quite honestly, if they had stopped 6 months ago, I don't think anybody would have faulted them and said, oh, you never delivered us a full game. You know, they delivered us a full game and a lot of good stuff a long time ago. But this, like, it almost feels like now they just want to one-up their critics. And that's fine, too, because the game just keeps going. But, you know, I was talking about this with Alan yesterday, and he did bring up a good point, and that was that he kind of, like, he was playing it for a little bit, but almost got frustrated that whenever there was a big update, it was like, I have to, like, relearn the game. I have to, like, restart because all these things have changed in the game. I don't think you necessarily have to restart, but sometimes you just, like, there's that psychological part that's like, I've missed all this stuff, so I need to go back to the beginning and re-experience it all. And so I kind of get that, too, where it's like, hey, guys, hello, games. What you're doing is fabulous, and we love that you've supported the game this long. But at the same time, could you kind of tell us, like, when you're done so that we know it's safe to go exploring now and that I don't know. Like, it's kind of a fine line. What do you guys think in chat? Do they keep building out the game, or is it time to just stop and let us experience what there is? What do you think, Loki or Dark Sakura?
I still have to go back to play the game. It's been a while, and I've got a PC now, so I need to do that, but I don't know if I want to play it in VR and go into one of those new freighters.
Well, I think that for them, this is actually kind of a way to keep a franchise alive without actually having to do too much work to it. Does that make sense?
Sure. I mean, I get it. It is work, but it's starting from scratch is a lot more work. Creating No Man's Sky 2 is even more work. I get it.
Exactly. So in this way, they get to keep putting out more content without having to go through all the strains of – I'm trying to think of the best way to put it – without the strains of having to recreate their world. It's just adding on and adding on. Like, they've got infinite property, and you're just adding new – it's like Sarah Winchester in her house. For anyone who don't know, just look up the Winchester Mystery House. This is the Winchester Mystery House of games.
No, that's right on the money. That's a perfect
observation. I'm joking.
No, that is the perfect comparison. No Man's Sky is the Winchester Mystery House of games. You're absolutely right.
But hey, you know, she kept doing it until she died. And nature tried to knock it over. And guess what? The house fucking stood. So No Man's Sky is going to stand, just like the Winchester Mystery House.
Look at it. I think the Winchester Mystery House might be a local reference. Like, most people from Northern California probably understand the joke.
It was that movie.
That's right. They made a movie out of it. I forgot. It wasn't good, though. I don't think a lot of people saw it. So if you
I don't want to see it, though, because I love that place.
There's this woman, and Winchester was like a gun company or something, right? And she...
Yeah, it was actually the Winchester Rifle Company.
Yeah. There's this house in San Jose, and everybody knows it because everybody took a field trip there at some point in their life. So, well, that grew up in this area. And so she kept building and building and building to this house because she believed she was being haunted or something like that. Like the victims of the guns.
The story goes is that because her husband's guns had killed so many Native Americans that she thought she was being haunted by their spirits. She saw a medium who said that she wasn't going to die until construction stopped on the house. I mean, and there's a lot. She was a pretty private lady on top of it, so there's really not a whole lot that's known. But, you know, the house itself is absolutely amazing. I've been on the extended tour. Chris and I went before they moved out to Wisconsin.
I have a secret. I've never been.
What? It's beautiful.
I've done Rocky Horror Picture Show in the movie theater next door. And yes, there's a movie theater next door.
That was where I saw Pan's Labyrinth.
It's right in the middle of San Jose. It's like this.
Did they tear it down, though? The movie theater.
The movie theater, they were going to tear it down. Because we had a mutual friend who was the manager there for many years.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
So, but they finally tearing it down.
But at any rate, I mean... And you go into this house, and it's actually going back to No Man's Sky. You go through and you have all this discovery and you find these interesting little things and things that look like they're purposeless, I guess. That's a word I'm making up just now, purposeless. Like she has a seance room that has a door that leads to a two-story drop. There are stairs that go to nowhere, just to the ceiling. She collected so much Tiffany. There's like, they've got a whole room dedicated to the Tiffany that she collected. And these teensy tiny little stairs. But if you think about it again in terms of the game being like the Winchester Mystery House, doesn't the game have kind of weird dead ends like that too?
So we have a mutual friend, and I don't want to out them here on the show, but he lives kind of out in a rural area in a very kind of older home. And we always kind of joke that he lived in the Winchester Mystery House because he legit had this like room where like you would open a door and there'd just be a brick wall there. Like,
yeah,
there was crazy stuff like that in the house. And we're like, dude, your house is haunted. But he loves it there. So anyway. All right. Sorry. We got on a tangent, but that's okay. We're
educated. Okay, let me ask. We're edutainment once in a while. Have an emu?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'll text you. It's somebody local.
Okay. Okay. Because I want to go there now.
Okay. I texted you.
Okay. But at any rate, y'all, just look up pictures of the Winchester Mystery. Oh, okay, cool. I love him. I haven't talked to him in so long.
Yeah, it's been a while for me too.
But at any rate, I think when you look at the Winchester Mystery House and you look at the game, it is the Winchester Mystery House of games. I feel confident in giving it that moniker.
No, that's great. And who even needs to expand on that?
Okay, Hype Mayhem. I know you know what I meant. He says, okay, not going to lie, even though I know what Jamie meant by Tiffany, I also made a connection to the teen from the 80s that sang I Think We're Alone Now.
Now,
you know what? Tiffany was a great singer.
Mm-hmm.
She did more than Malls.
Okay, one point I have to get back to, though, that's very important with this is that the whole and you brought up this idea, Dark Soccer, with your Winchester Mystery House comparison, is that there is particularly like new features and new things that might expose the game to a new audience that hasn't experienced the game yet. And a lot of you guys in chat are kind of, when you hear that they've built this jump scare thing in a No Man's Sky and they've built a Dead Space type game, a lot of you guys in chat are like, nope, No Man's Sky, nope and out of that, not for me, it's not what I want to do. But if you think about it, and I'm sure all of you can see this, there is an audience that loves scary games. Look at some of the big stuff that streamed on Twitch, a lot of scary games, right? And there's probably an audience out there that when they hear, oh, did you hear No Man's Sky has like a full on horror mode now? People are going to be like, what? Really? I need to go back and visit that game, or I need to pick that game up already. It's on sale again, or, you know, whatever it is. So it, even though you might look at that feature and go, that's really not for me, I think you can see where, oh, there's somebody else is going to look at that and go, oh, I should check that out. That's my jam. I love horror games. So kind of interesting. Anyway. All right. Let's move on. More big stories. I think this one's yours, Loki, or who's, or is it mine? I don't, where are we at even?
It would be Jamie.
Oh, it's Jamie's.
Me again?
Yep.
Well, shit. I was going to eat some more pizza, but okay. So there, you know, we often complain about Metacritic with, you know, especially like when there's games that come out that people just want to immediately poo-poo on because they want to, you know, there was a woman developed it or a writer, or they don't like the storyline and they're just, you know, really doing that. So now, you know, we call that review bombing, right? So it's become such a big issue now that Metacritic announced that they're going to delay user reviews for a video game for 36 hours after the game's release. And they quote that their decision is based on, here's the quote, data-driven research and with the input of critics and industry experts. So here's the rest of it. We recently implemented the 36-hour waiting period for all user reviews in our game section to ensure our gamers have time to play these games before writing their reviews, a Metacritic spokesperson said. The new waiting period is for user reviews. Have been rolled out across Metacritic's game section and was based on data-driven research with the input of critics and industry standards. Now, we know that if they want to bomb it, they're going to bomb it, but my hope with this is that they're going to you know, kind of push people off that immediate thing when they see that they can't get their immediate reward out of it, that hopefully they're not going to do it. Now, on top of that, just to add in another layer on things, and this has actually been, you know, going on for quite a while, you know, developers are really unhappy with how Metacritic was handling it before because, you know, some of those reviews are the lifeblood of their careers, their games, you know? So, I think this is a good step. Whether or not it will work remains to be seen, but, you know.
Yeah, with the whole Metacritic thing, I mean, I just don't listen to user reviews in the first place. That kind of would fix the problem, in my opinion.
Well, but the thing is, it's supposed to be, you know, what's the word I'm thinking of? It's supposed to be community-driven as well. So I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to stop people from reviewing games on their Twitter account or on their Facebook feed or on other places with social media or what have you. But, you know, I guess Metacritic, if they want to stop being known as like the home of terrible user reviews because games keep getting bombed because it's a game for SJWs or whatever thing people are mad about with the games, I can understand where Metacritic's like, we got to do something. Like, this is getting crazy.
I don't think it's going to really, I mean, maybe it'll just calm them down a little bit, but like, I think they're going to still review bomb it. They'll review bomb it at other places like Steam or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Do you think sometimes when a company does this, it sets something in motion where like other companies start to follow suit a little bit. Do you think Metacritic might be setting a standard that sites like Steam and so forth are going to follow? Although I don't know, Steam also just shows like right there, like you've played for this many hours. So you know on Steam right away, like this person actually played the game or they're full of shit.
Yeah, I don't know if that's going to necessarily, I think that I know Metacritic is kind of garbage when it comes to user reviews anyways. I mean, that's what a lot of people think. So it would be nice to have it not be garbage. I don't know. I just kind of just consider it just a complete garbage when I look at the user reviews. It's a good aggregate for like, you know, professional reviews, but people want their voices heard and they're going to wait 3 days if they have to.
Or, like I said, it's gonna make it not fun for them anymore having to wait. And so there's not going to be any point in doing it.
Games do make so much of their buck right when they launch, though. You know, like that launch week, that launch day is so important that even delaying that by 3 days might kind of sway things one way or another. I think look a lot with Mass Effect Andromeda, I think, is a good example of that. Because remember how, like, a lot of the negativity for that game, which, you know, in retrospect may have been too much, really came out because it was released on that EA Access or whatever about 3 days before the main. It might have been a little more, like maybe like 6 or 7 days.
Right.
But it came out a few days before it hit every other site, and that's when people tore this game apart and were showing off all the bugs that hit social media and all this other stuff. And it kind of did impact, I would say, how much that game sold on day one, was because EA did that preview for their, you know, monthly whatever peoples.
And I don't think, like, you know, my initial concern was that this is some other thing that they're going to use. And when I say they, I mean, like, the game industry is going to use to try to hide negative reviews for, you know, legitimate stuff. Like, for example, when they're adding loot boxes in, you know, a lot of times you'll see these review embargoes until, you know, the release date, where they're hiding that stuff in there so that people are unaware of it when they're making their purchases or their pre-orders, whatnot. I don't think that's going to be the case for this. I think it's more of just to cut down on the garbage, but you're just delaying the inevitable. And if people are going to complain about a game, or if there's like something that is really wrong with something, there's plenty of other outlets to complain about that.
Yeah, you are right in that. They're going to just go to Twitter. They're going to go to Facebook. They're going to go to, you know, other social media platforms, Twitter being the biggest one that comes to mind, and have their way there. So going to chat for some comments. Questbuster in chat says, I remember the early looks from Andromeda's early access via EA Origins went viral over the flaws. Yeah, that was a huge, I think, faux pas to put. I mean, it's a weird thing, because I want to say it was really bad of EA to put that out early so that all those bugs could be called out. But at the same time, those bugs needed to be called out. That game was released half-baked. Even though it was delayed a bunch of times, it needed to be delayed one more time. Cyberpunk has the right idea in that regard. And, you know, even though we can all look at Cyberpunk and go, oh, God, they are delaying that game again. Well, do you want it to be Mass Effect? Do you want it to be Mass Effect Andromeda? So, you know, they might have to delay it again. So, all right. Anyway, let's move on. We have some more stories. Loki.
All right. So, like most things are, you know, convention related, everything's kind of gone to this whole digital equivalent. And that's going to be the same thing that's going to happen to QuakeCon, which is held every year around August. And so this year they're going to be doing QuakeCon at Home 2020. It's going to be set between August 7th and the 9th. And they're going to have various events that are going to go along with that. So they're going to have the global super stream that's going to feature news and different updates about Bethesda products. They're going to have the QuakeCon Pro League and QuakeCon World Championships. And yeah. They're also still having a prize pool up there, so $150,000 up for grabs. I'm not really. I mean, it'll be neat. It's nice that they're going to be able to carry on with this, even though they can't do an in-person event. But I don't know. Not super excited about Bethesda these days.
I'm kind of like, let's see what the big news is that comes out about it. You know, like if there's another Quake, I don't know what are we expecting? They're going to release another Quake game at some point, or is it still just about the Champions game?
I don't know if there's any other news, although I do see here in this article, they're talking about some new t-shirts, and those look pretty nice. Like they have the Dovahkiin, mm-hmm. and there's the Cato Demon. They're pretty cool.
I do still have a lot of love for classic Quake, though, because I used to play that on LAN in college with friends who had high-speed internet at their university, and I would dial in and play with them Quake. We had a lot of fun with that. And I think that was – I think we would do Team Fortress, too, back in the – because, you know, that's where Team Fortress started, was a Quake mod. So it's good.
Yeah. So what the other thing that's kind of cool about this, too, is there are live streams that they're going to be doing as well. Mm. They're going to be donating the proceeds to those to different charities. So you have the Direct Relief, UNICEF, the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, and the Trevor Project.
Cool.
And then they're also saying that you can also donate as well to the Dallas Pet Alive and Four Paws.
Well, very cool. I love that they're turning it into a charity thing at this point. So that's a good use. Great.
Yep.
All right. Let's move on. And this kind of falls in the whole, like, rumors category. But there's a little smoke with this one that shows there might be a little fire. And this has to do with some Twitter accounts that were recently registered. And it appears they were registered by Nintendo. There was a Twitter account called at Super Mario 35th that was registered back in March of this year that somebody recently found. And it looks like, oh, there might be something going on for Super Mario's 35th anniversary. We've heard earlier rumors that Nintendo plans to do like re-releases of old Mario games this holiday and really kind of like, you know, put out old Mario stuff again on the Switch for this anniversary. Maybe like a souped up version of Mario 64, things like that. Mario Sunshine might make a comeback. We've heard these rumors before. And now we see a Twitter account that kind of goes, oh, there might be something there. Who knows? Now, a lot of you probably thinking what I first thought when I saw this is I was like, any idiot can roll a Twitter account with any name they want. But I didn't realize you could do this. One thing you can do on Twitter is you can go in and you can request to reset your password. Well, I knew you could do that, but it actually shows you, it says, like, you know, do you have your, you know, email address or whatever? And it says email da 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 with a link. So that would be the email that's tied to the Twitter account. Well, while you can't see the whole email, it masks it for privacy reasons so that, you know, whoever, you don't want to be given out, especially like celebrities, like you don't want to know the email behind Lady Gaga's account, right? That would be too much. But what's interesting, it says email a link to, it says ML and then a bunch of asterisks, like it's somebody's name, at N blank, 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 dot blank, blank, dot blank, blank. Which is the perfect length for at nintendo.co.jp. And what somebody noticed is that it is the same email link, like the same like chain of letters as the official Splatoon JP account and the Smash Brothers JP account. So it looks like this Super Mario 35th may be something official, but are you ready for the real whopper? Because that isn't the only Twitter account that was made. There is another Twitter account that was made. And that Twitter...
We're finally going to make an F-Zero game.
Loki, it is at F-Zero JP. Is the other... That is no joke. That is the other... That is the other Twitter account. Way to ruin my hype. It really is...
Sorry,
no,
impossible.
I thought it was a fucking joke too. And the same thing, they went through and tried to reset the password, and it's the same link, such and such at blank 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 blank. So F0JP appears to be an account. Now, before we get too carried away, this could be a lot of things. This could be just them protecting their IP, which Nintendo's notorious to do, so that nobody else rolls this account. It could be maybe we get a it doesn't necessarily mean a new F-Zero game. It could be a re-release of F-Zero GX and AX, which I would be totally happy with, to be quite honest. I'd be totally good with that. It could be that. Who knows? You know, there was a lot of rumors. Again, now we're really going to the rumor farm, but whatever. Who cares? There was a lot of rumors that one of the games that Nintendo bumped back from this holiday that they've been working hard on was Mario Kart 9. What if, and humor me for a minute here, what if somewhere along the way Mario Kart 9 became a new F-Zero game? I mean, there's enough...
I don't see that happening.
Look at something like 250cc, for God's sake. It plays pretty crazy fast. And there's perfectly competent F-Zero tracks and stuff in Mario Kart. Like, maybe they decided to make Mario Kart 9 an F-Zero game instead somewhere along the way. Again, I completely realize I'm being tinfoil hatty and, you know, rumor mongering and all that stuff. Fine. But this Twitter account is interesting. It does appear Nintendo did register it. So, SSGO100 Matt says, don't do this. Don't mess with us like this. Sorry. Orange Wright says, I'll believe it when I see it. Same at the end of the day. Zet in chat says, too late. He opened the box. It can't be closed again. Yep. I went there. Sorry, y'all. I bought a house there. I live there. What can we do? Hype Mayhem says Mario Kart versus F-Zero. That I wouldn't get. I mean, in a way, you kind of already have that in Mario Kart 8. But a full-on versus, that would be a little weird to me. Because, F-Zero is supposed to be more science fiction-y. But maybe they're going to take it in a cartoony direction. I don't know. It's too early to say. We have a fucking Twitter account and nothing else. I just need Nintendo to have a Direct already. I think that's what we all want. But we'll see. Oh, who knows? All right. Whew. All right. Anyhow, enough of rumors with that, but that one got me really excited. I'm still laughing that you kind of ruined the punchline there, Loki, with like, oh, what's it going to be, a new F-Zero? Well, actually. All right. Anyway, Dark Sakura, you have another story for us before we get to our classic segment.
I do?
I think so. About.
Yeah, I do. Sorry. I was used to going right into my classic game, so... Yeah. Anyway, there is a Twitch streamer who built a computer inside of a video game. And it was done in, let's see, it was, oh my gosh, why can't I read? So anyway, a person named Tyler Hill built a reduced instruction set computer, RISC, inside of another sandbox adventure game called Astroneer. He is kind of known for trying to build computers inside of video games. So he actually posted it. There's a link on Twitter to it, and he did a demo. It's actually out there public, and he actually even explained how he did it. So, and it looks like it's really just like a huge countdown. So it's basically just very optimized instructions given a place to live in this game. So I thought it was pretty cool. But at any rate, yeah, it's a programception, gameception, compuception.
No, it's they built a game inside a game. Well, sorts.
More like a counter inside a game, but still, it's computing within computing.
Yeah, no, I think that's super cool. Like, it makes me think of people that... Wasn't there, like, an emulator built in Minecraft or something like that? I don't know. I might be just making shit up.
They did a Game Boy emulator, I think, at one time.
Okay, so that's pretty cool. But the fact that somebody kind of broke it down even to, like, what a computer's kind of, like, bare roots are, I think that's pretty cool. And I love that they streamed it, too, so that you can actually go back and learn something, so to speak. So, cool. All right. Well, now I suppose we can take a step back and take a look at Dark Sakura's classic game of the week. Every week here on Orange Lounge Radio, Dark Sakura steps into the gaming vault and finds a game that she thinks, hey, you brats ought to be checking this game out this week. But once a month in the year 2020, she, instead of spotlighting a classic video game, likes to spotlight a classic pinball table. And what is the table going to be this week?
I'm doing one that we're borrowing right now. Mm-hmm. That is Scared Stiff. And I'm doing this in honor of the new Stern Elvira game that's coming out that, oh my gosh, Rob, if you haven't seen it, it's pretty cool. It's a... got one of the video screens and everything, and it plays back like old black and white B movies while she does commentary on it, Elvira's House of Horrors. But we're not talking about the new pinball, we're talking about the old pinball. So Scared Stiff came out in 1996. It was designed by Dennis Nordman, released by Midway as Bally, and it features Elvira, Mistress of the Dark. And it's the follow-up to 1989's Elvira and the Party Monsters, who was also designed by Nordman. Now, the reason I didn't go with the one in 1989, because I'm pretty much doing 90s and up for pinball, I'm basically picking where we started getting the D&Ds and everything, so not any of the little ticker bars like Black Knight. The one before was very much like the same type of scoring like Black Knight did. But anyway, the game, of course, has a B-movie horror theme. You have to go through tales of terror to level up on the Stiffometer. And you have Eyes of the Bony Beast, Terror from the Crate, The Stiff in the Coffin, The Monster's Lab, Night of the Leapers, and Return of the Deadheads. We also have an interactive back box that has a spinning slider. A spinning spider. My gosh. And you use it to collect different features and start special modes. And it uses the DLC sound system. It was one of those games that when they did the exhibition at the 1996 AMOA show, Miss Cassandra Peterson showed up as Elvira to promote the game. Pretty cool. It was supposed to have these little rubber boogeyman major slingshots that were supposed to move forward with the kicker. This is when you hit the slingshot. And the ROM still allows the boogeyman to dance with the music from the boogeyman boogie mode. But they removed it late in production because the arms were, they thought they were going to break off. Because there's an opening between the feet of the slingshot plastics that's actually still present that you can go in. And there's even something about it in the game's manual. So since the code is still there, people have added the boogeyman modifications back to their games. You can buy them at freeplayamusements.com. Or you can look for him at robertwinter.com. I think it's a person who's re-releasing them. But at any rate, I'm going now to the specifics from IPMD, the Internet Pinball Machine Database. It actually is a really amazing machine. You can look at all the specifications on it there, the back glass screen. I think what I linked was a pinball arcade or something like that. But the game's really, really super fun. And, you know, it's got a great theme because Elvira is just absolutely hilarious. She is a queen. She is a drag queen. And she did it perfectly before. A lot of our modern queens owe their stuff to Elvira. I'm just saying. But at any rate, it's really amazing. If you never have played it, you need to find it. And there's another note that there's a skull pile in the upper right corner of the playfield that do not have light up eyes in the production games. So if you see any games that have LEDs in the skull, this is after factory, as were, of course, the Boogeyman Kickers. So there you go. The classic game of September 1996 is Scared Stiff by Bally Midway.
And one of my very favorite tables as well, because I love Elvira. How can you not?
Decontaminate yourself and come play.
I know, right? Been stuck in this house since March. Haven't been able to do anything.
You haven't been around other people for 2 weeks, and you're not sick, so...
There's that whole thing that happened with my dad, so technically I'm not at 2 weeks yet. Yeah, so...
Yeah. But in any rate, see, listen to us. We're being responsible. We quarantine before we make any plans, and it's all masks all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So speaking of which, I'm putting my mask back on.
Oh,
so
yes.
So I can go back on camera.
Because you're about to bid us adieu tonight, right?
Adieu. Yep.
All right.
Oh, I forgot the song. Crap. Oh, well.
And don't forget your mic gets really quiet when you have that mask on.
I know. Here, I'll put it under. Ooh, it's in my mouth now. See me? Ah! All
right.
I'm filling this with rosemary and rose petals. So it's rosemary or maybe rosemary rose. And I am coming to stick the cocaines in you and use my leeches to get rid of the nasty humors that are causing your illness. Oh. How's that?
Beautiful. Thank you so much.
Where's my Oscar, bitch?
It's in the mail. Anyway, I know you have to bid us adieu, but take care. Thank you for being here. Do you have any final thoughts for our listeners tonight?
Don't be stupid.
Good advice. Thank you. I'll take that to heart.
Yeah. Wear your mask. Wash your hands. If you've been around people for any reason, take 2 weeks to decontaminate. Make sure you're not sick. Oh, and good news, my mom does not have the COVID.
I totally forgot to ask you that question on air, but I know you told me that off air, but yeah, great. Thank you for confirming.
does not have the COVID.
Yeah.
So
that's
huzzah.
Good news. Huzzah. Yeah. Hope she feels better nonetheless, because obviously whatever she has is pretty shitty.
Yeah, it's like a flu or something. But I sent her her vitamins and feel good stuff, so I'll check on her. But everybody, be smart. Take care of yourself. Be healthy, be safe, and be intelligent.
All right.
Because if you're not, I'll make fun of you and then stay, you know, miles away from you.
All right.
With
sounds,
love. With love.
Sounds good. Take care, Jamie.
All right. You too. Bye.
Bye. All right. We're going to move on with rapid fire news. Loki. You want to unmute yourself, Loki? It'll be easier to hear you.
I want to do that. Yes. Oh, yes, that would be good. So apparently, there's been a lot of people upset with the fact that Rockstar Games hasn't updated Red Dead Online in a while. So they haven't had a major update in over 7 months, with the last one being in December of last year. And so to kind of protest that, the users online have been dressing like clowns. So they're bringing in the clowns to protest the fact that this isn't a joke to them.
I think that's funny because the whole clownery is kind of like a meme online. And so there's all sorts of like clown memes out there. You know, when you do clownery, the clown come back to bite, you know, those sorts of things. So I love that they're actually like dressing. Like how big of a clown can you be in Red Dead? Like, can you full on like red nose Hong Kong?
You can do some pretty decent clown makeup in there. At least the outfit looks period accurate clowning.
All right. So, pure clownery.
So right. That's what they're doing to protest that, which, yeah, I mean, I get it. Maybe they just don't make as much. Rockstar is probably not bringing as much money with Red Dead Online, but they've never really kind of given it the same attention as Grand Theft Auto 5 or Grand Theft Auto Online. So, yeah, you get what you put into it, I guess.
Yeah, for sure.
And then more movie news coming out, and just as crazy as some of these other movie ideas that they've had with like the Saints Row movie and stuff, this was another one that I would definitely want to see. It's Just Cause. So Just Cause has finally secured a director, Mike Douse, who I guess he had shot, let's see, a metal mockumentary, FUBAR, the F word, some episodes for that. And, of course, the show that's on, I think, Hulu right now, of Future Man, and then they have Preacher. So I don't see necessarily a lot of movie stuff there. But, yeah, if they can keep it as crazy as the game, then I'm all in, because that game is absolutely nuts.
Sounds like something up your alley.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
That'd be crazy.
Moving on, some other rapid fire news. For those of you guys that don't like to download your games or buy them online and you prefer to install them the old fashioned way, I'm talking about PC games. You have quite the option for Microsoft Flight Simulator. You can actually buy a version of Microsoft Flight Simulator, which is a 90 gigabyte game that will actually come on 10 different DVDs. That's right. 10 different DVDs, because apparently, and Jason was kind of hinting at this in the intro a little bit for tonight's show, apparently a lot of computers don't actually have Blu-ray players in them. DVDs a little more standard. Not to say, I mean, I'm sure many of you in chat are like, mine has a Blu-ray player. Yeah, some of them do, but because Blu-ray didn't really catch on as like a standard for digital medium, I think a lot more computers kind of have DVD built in. And Flight Simulator is one of those games. I mean, it's for truly for people of all ages. But there is like an older audience, like especially like retired pilots and, you know, older folks that maybe don't actually get to get out and fly like a regular plane. I would say that Microsoft Flight Simulator is actually like has a good sales block from this group of, you know, probably older folks who don't do the Steam and the online stuff, who have to do something a little more, and I'm using my quotey fingers, old-fashioned. And so installing from the DVDs might be the way to do it. So it actually, you know, as much as we're kind of like laughing at it, because like, 10 DVDs to play one game, that's crazy. Although, you know, back in the day, I remember when it was those 3.5-inch floppies, and I think it was like King's Quest 5 or 6 was on like 14 discs. To install.
Well,
it's a
gigantic
game.
That would take a long time, but hey, I mean, if you're strapped for a bandwidth, you know, and you know, that's 90 gigs that you don't have to download.
Or you live in a place like Alaska or something that doesn't have, you know, well, obviously if you live in like Juneau or one of the big cities, but you know, again, if you're a retired pilot, chances are you probably live somewhere pretty remote on your nice little ranch somewhere, and you may not have that kind of internet, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's really interesting. So they say the simulator is 100% the same. The boxed retail version just has a nice box and about 90 gigs that you don't have to download. There's no difference between boxed retail and the version that Microsoft sells directly. It's kind of interesting. But yeah, I think this is really to address like an older audience that wouldn't necessarily buy a lot of other games, so to speak. And SG100 Matt says, where is Legend of Zaku? He's the flight simulator buff. But also an excellent example of the fact that when I say like the older audience is an audience, it's clearly not the only audience. Zaku is not over the age of 65. In fact, he's quite younger than I am and enjoys flight simulators. And there's people that enjoy flight sims of all ages, of course. And so there's many people that will just do the 90 gigabyte download, I'm sure. I just think it is kind of interesting that a game like this kind of has to still do an old-fashioned, so to speak, route, probably for a certain chunk of its audience. So Tiger Claw in chat says, imagine how many floppies this game would take. Yeah, but counterpoint, as fun as that is to imagine, how many computers actually have floppy drives anymore? I remember it was like an Ingress thing or something. Something happened where like there was a 3.5-inch floppy somebody found, and I think it was an Ingress thing. We had to get the contents of the disk. Nobody on the team had a fucking 3.5-inch floppy drive. Nobody had a drive to do it. Like, so now to find a working floppy drive is actually a challenge. And again, I'm sure there's somebody in chat that's going to go, I've got one. It works. Okay, but you do realize you're one of only a few that still has a working one. And they have USB. Like, it's very easy to find, like, a USB $20, like, floppy drive type of thing so that people can get old pictures and old media and things like that. There's certainly plenty of uses for it, but I think we all know that isn't common. DVD drives are common now in computers and have been for over 10 years, probably more like 15 years, probably even longer than that. Shit, probably closer to 20 years in computers. Yeah. Anyway, looking in chat, Tiger Claw says, I bet you can find on eBay. Of course. SG100 Matt says, yeah, Newegg has a bunch. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Again, I'm not saying these things don't exist. I'm just saying they're not common in computers anymore. And that was the idea behind this was what is common in computers if somebody doesn't have the right internet? Now, Pod Culture in chat says, wonder why they couldn't go USB. Even old computers have that. That's actually a good question. It's probably cheaper to actually do the 10 DVDs.
It's cheaper to press the discs than it is to purchase a USB and have that available.
Some of those USB sticks, though, are pretty. But 90, maybe a 32 and a 64 would still be pretty cheap. Once you start to go past that, it probably gets a little more pricey, and it probably isn't, you know. But like for a collector's edition or something, I don't think Pod Culture's idea is necessarily bad.
No, it's not a terrible idea. It's just I don't think they want to spend that money, whereas it costs cents to press a disc. So I don't know. And even on top of that, even after you've installed everything off that disc, you still have to download updates that can be significantly large.
Now, DJ Rama S brings up a good point saying, interesting that you discussed this. I'm looking to buy a new computer case to rebuild my PC into, and 90% of cases out there don't support spaces for DVD or Blu-ray drives. Well, now it's the opposite problem. Why should they? What even comes out on DVD and Blu-ray anymore? Microsoft Flight Simulator.
And... Well, you can always just get a USB drive. I mean, that's what you're...
And... There's a great application of Pod Culture's idea. It's a USB drive now.
No, I meant like a USB DVD drive.
Oh yeah,
like
no, you plug for sure. It in through USB. My first CD burner was an external that was through USB. You remember that? Because I think it was on the OLR computer, the one in the garage, for a while.
My first CD drive was a SCSI, an external SCSI card.
Now,
so. That was fun.
I remember my old work.
Single speed. Woo!
Who remembers these? I used to have the zip drive at work, which was gigantic fucking discs. Was it 100 megs that they held or 100 gigs? It was 100 megs.
It was 100 megs. Yeah. And so, yes. So previously, I used to have pretty decent internet. This is back when I was on like dial up. So I had decent internet like at work. So I used to
Not everybody knows this, but I used to do light publishing work like way back in the day. And so some of the layouts, they were too big for a normal disk. And this zip drive was like maybe like 2 years before like CD burners were commonplace. So we actually had the zip drive thing. And I used to save it to a zip drive and FedEx it to the main office to be in the magazine. That's how we would send the files back and forth, because you couldn't like 100 meg. You couldn't send a print layout. It was way too big of a file, but like the right. zip drive was like the perfect media for it.
And then before zip drives, it used to be zipping it up and disk spanning, which was
oh god.
And I would do that with like 50 disks.
Oh yeah, with shareware. Yeah, hell yeah.
Not necessarily shareware, with step files.
Oh god.
For DDR sims.
All right.
Dial up back.
We got to move on. We still got more show to cover here. And let's talk about EA. EA is going to remove the Washington football team's name in Madden 21. I'm sure you guys all heard the Washington team. This is how much I follow sports, everybody. You ready? You all ready to make fun of me? SSG 100, Matt, you got your popcorn ready? Up until this week, I always thought when they were talking about the Washington football team, it was Washington State. I thought they were in like Spokane or something. I did not realize until this week that that team was a Washington, D.C. team. That's how much I follow football. I'm so embarrassed, but also not. Like, come on. But yeah, so that team, as you know, is changing their name. We don't know what the new name is going to be yet, but Madden 21 has already responded. EA saying they're going to make some changes there. So they will have that fixed in Madden 21. I imagine that's going to be in a patch maybe, because Madden 21 comes out on August 25th. So it's very likely it's already gone gold. Yeah. I don't know. But there will be a generic Washington name and logo first, and then they will patch in whatever is decided later on. So I think it's just going to be Washington with no name and like a W on the hat or something. And then they will patch in whatever they actually decide to do when that's all figured out. So there you go. And I got to look at chat and see if there's any comments. SSG 100 Matt says, actually, that's not that bad. Oh, thank you. Y'all are so nice. SSG 100 Matt says, although the last MAGFest you were at, Rob, that football team took up part of the hotel. I didn't realize. You say that, it makes sense, but anyway. Bobby Blackwolf says, The Onion had a great article about how they were finally changing the offensive part of their name and changing their name to the DC old name. This is funny. All right. Moving on. Let's travel around the world and check out some release dates. I need to step away real quick, Loki, so I'm going to do Japanese releases first, if you don't mind, so that gives you a nice little buffer of time there.
Sure.
All right. So let me do the Japanese releases real quick here. So coming out in Japan this week, first off on the Nintendo Switch, coming out, I think Call of Cthulhu is the only game this week on the Nintendo Switch that is coming out on the 23rd. And then on the PlayStation 4 this week over in Japan, Sengoku Basara 4 Sumargari, and that's an anniversary edition. So that is a price reduction of a game from Capcom. I'm trying to see if this is one that I recognized. Sengoku Basara. Is this Dynasty Warriors? No, because they don't. Capcom doesn't make that game.
It's like Dynasty Warriors.
It's Capcom's version of that. Yeah, I can't remember the name of it here. I'm sure somebody in chat will type in with
that. They call it Sengoku Basara here.
Did they call it that here? I thought they gave it a different name.
They did. It was on the Wii or something, or maybe it was around the time that the Wii was around. They called it something different, but I don't remember what it was. But gotcha. I think they still call it Sengoku Basara.
Gotcha. All right, I will be right back, Loki.
Okay. Let's see. So in the U.S., we've got a few things coming out this week. So Rock of Ages 3, Make and Break on PC, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and Stadia. Carry On, which is from Devolver Digital, that's going to be on PC, Nintendo Switch, and Xbox One. Crisis Remastered on Nintendo Switch. Tannenberg on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. And last but not least, this week, actually, that would be last and not least. So Tannenberg it is. And then we've got for the UK, a new Super Lucky's Tale on PlayStation 4 and Human Fall Flat on PlayStation 4, Nintendo Switch, and Xbox One. And then finally, that's it, I guess. Very limited. Lots of stuff coming out next week, though. I've got Destroy All Humans, or the week after next, Destroy All Humans, that remake. Man, it's been a while since I played that. But that'll be coming out on consoles very soon. And until then, I guess we can talk about Minecraft, since Rob's not here. So, as you see, like, this video that's been playing in the very background here of my image, it's actually a survival server that we've been doing for about 4 months, I think. Because we did have a world that had started off with my kids, but we finished that very fast because they wanted to kind of cheat their way through everything. And finally convinced them again to start from scratch and not cheat. So we've been doing that for a while. Finally finished taking on pretty much all the challenges in this. The last thing we have to do is actually the Woodland Mansion. But we did the sea, or was it the ocean monuments? We did two of those yesterday. And so I'd actually physically took down one whole monument. And I'm going to turn the other one into a guardian spawner. So that'll be fun.
I'm back. Thank you for buying time.
No problem.
No, that's good.
Talking about Minecraft.
That's good. I can hear on my monitor here, so that's good. All right, awesome. We're going to go to the mailbag. So every week you guys send us emails, participate@orangelaunchradio.com, and we read some of our favorites here on the show. So we have a couple emails here tonight, and we're going to start tonight with an email from good old YYR, creator of such classic games available on Steam, such as Super Multitasking, such as Names That Escape Me in the Moment, Sharpshooter, Bungee Ferret Tossing, although that's not on Steam right now, but it's, you know, check out his site, yyrgames.com. It goes over everything. Hello, LR. Towards the end of the July 5th show, you mentioned DDR A20+, new level check feature. I find it to be one of the really interesting additions to this new version, so I figured I'd explain how it works. This special stage will begin playing automatically if the first stage is failed, and if at least one player has never passed a level 7 or higher song, or did not log in with eAmusement Pass. The machine will proclaim, "Let's see your moves," and will begin playing one of A20's certified bangers, This Beat Is, but with a special chart. This full-length chart starts off very easy, with just occasional simple steps, but ramps up in difficulty as you play, testing you with jumps, freeze arrows, and some mix-ups. If you miss 20 steps, you will fail out, but the other player can keep going if they're doing better. Just as with the tutorial, you can also choose to skip this stage entirely by pressing the green button on the machine. If you don't skip, then you'll get a results screen after the stage is played, and it'll show a recommended level for each player between 1 and 6, or simply over 6 if you aced it. That's a pun. It will also show some chart recommendations, but since it only picks from default songs added to A20+, the pool it picks from is rather small. Finally, if at least one player logged in with their eAmusement Pass and Premium Play was used, the game will proceed to the second stage as usual because 3 songs are guaranteed. If not, the game ends there, and you'll have to play again if you want to try the recommendations. Still, I think it's nice that you get to play a bit longer if you bomb out of the first song. Yeah, it's one of those things where, like, now that you're explaining it, I'm like, damn, that would have been awesome in DDR back in the day. Like, a song to measure, like, this is the level of song you should be trying right now. Why don't they should put that in like Beatmania 2DX and their other games, which I realize, man, I wish we had Beatmania 2DX at home. I so wish we had that, but I guess that's another story. All right. Anyway, I'm actually taking a peek at chat real quick. Dark Tetsuya in chat says, "Oh, that sounds cool. Hopefully if we ever get out of this COVID thing and I can find a machine, I'll definitely play some A20+. Yeah, for sure. That's where I'm at too, is it's like, all right, any day when COVID's done. Okay. Moving on to the rest of that email. I didn't finish the email. It seems that this feature is intended for brand new players who have no idea what to pick and wind up choosing something too difficult. Unfortunately, this is also the sort of player who typically walks off after the first song, whether they pass or not. Oh, well. Before I go, I want to mention an interesting bit of news that may or may not have made the show roll. It appears that as of today, it is no longer possible to purchase a 12-month Xbox Live Gold subscription digitally, which, of course, we did talk about at the beginning of the show, but let's get YYR's thoughts. The 1-month and 3-month options remain, and their prices are unchanged, but the 12-month option has vanished entirely from the Xbox dashboard. Immediately, I thought of Rob's past speculation that Microsoft may choose to make online player free in the future. Or this may just be a heavy-handed way to steer folks towards Game Pass Ultimate. But if they want to really make headlines when the Series X launches, dropping paid online multiplayer would be one way to do it. What do you think? Well, I think I made my thoughts on this at the beginning of the show known, but I appreciate you because you've been a big Microsoft guy for a while now. I know in the early days, and I didn't even own an Xbox One, you were kind of sometimes setting our path right on some assumptions we'd made about the system that we weren't always right about. So the fact that I know you're kind of coming to the same conclusion that my crazy ass speculation did a few years ago is actually oddly comforting. So we'll see what becomes of it. And that's what I think. Anyway, thanks again for putting the show together and have another great week. Wishing he could actually go play DDR without risking his life. Aaron YYR. Same, same. And I really hope we get to the other side of this before too long. Anyway.
There was some pretty exciting stuff, speaking of DDR, that I saw on Twitter this week. So there's been a lot of development in producing a DDR OmniMix, which is basically hacking the old System 573 mixes to put whatever songs you want on there. And pretty exciting stuff I saw where they've mixed up the song lists to add stuff that's been taken out of Extreme and removing other songs like Let Them Move. And yeah, very exciting to see where that goes. Since I have a modded system, do that. Of course, I also have Setmania, so it's kind of irrelevant, but still would be neat.
That's still neat. I'd be curious to see where that goes. Cool. All right. We have one more email tonight from AJ Twist. I haven't heard this name in the email bag for a long time, so good to have you back. AJ Twist emails us saying, good evening, OLR. Long time listener, third time writer. So I knew you've written us before, but all right. I've had an itch for a new music rhythm game for a while now. We've got a lot of music stories tonight. I don't mind. A few months ago, I saw someone streaming Spin Rhythm XD and had to try it out. It almost plays like DJ Hero. It was $15 on Steam. I'm not sure if it's available anywhere else. It seems you can use almost anything for a controller. The button options are pretty wide. You can play it with keyboard and mouse or a controller. The craziest thing is the ability to use a MIDI turntable to play. Well, that's pretty cool. The game is not as polished as DJ Hero. It almost has this frequency amplitude look, in my opinion. It's a great game and has great music. 10 out of 10, recommend. Have any of you heard of it or played it? AJ Twist. I must admit, I'm going to open this. I have not, AJ Twist. I'm going to open it to chat to see if there's any further opinions. Spin Rhythm XD.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
Oh, you have heard
of it. Yeah, it's on my wish list. I just haven't bothered to buy it because I know I'm not going to actually play any of it. But yeah, it looks pretty cool. I think it does work with like the DJ Hero controllers too, if you have that in there. But yeah, pretty much any sort of like MIDI or just any sort of like turntable or dial or something that you use it, because the way that it works, there's like an actual a bar that basically you're just moving back and forth between the different lanes in there, and you can, you know, spin everything around and stuff. It looks pretty cool. I just, like I said, probably wouldn't play it.
I'll have to check
it
out.
I almost picked it up in the last sale. Yeah.
I'm very curious about the music, because I imagine a $15 game probably didn't license music, so it probably is
No, it's like $20 right now, so I mean, it's...
Did they license music, or is it original artists? Not that that's bad, but...
Part of
what made DJ Hero very appealing was that the mashup mixes were A+. Like,
what was it? It was Mary J. Blige, All of Me, and Queen's Radio Gaga is still like just like a song that I love. Like that mashup is so stinking good in that game. There's a lot of like great mashups in that game. But obviously that took some big record label, you know, maneuvering from a huge ass company like Activision to make happen. So again, I'm all about indie artists too and up and comers and so forth. So, I'd be just curious to hear how the songs are and the quality. Stuff.
Okay. So like, some of the like artists I recognize on this list, which probably is not going to be very many, Tokyo Machine. So they did a lot of stuff and they have Beat Saber and of course in, oh God, hell's that really popular game. I can't remember. Anyways, yeah, Beat Saber. I know they have some songs in there. Rocket League. That's what I was thinking of. Sorry. Oh. And what else? So the other artists that they mentioned on here, Rogue, Nitro Fun, Hyper Potions, Tut Tut Child, Panda Eyes, Terminite, Pegboard Nerds, Tristem, Bracken, Max. I haven't heard of a lot of these. Tokyo Machine's the only one I know, and their songs are awesome. So
okay, but it's folks that have either they're indie completely and this is their first experience, or like they were artists for other games. That's pretty cool, though. Rocket League has a sweet soundtrack, so that's cool. Some comments from chat. Tiger Claw says, I have a real live version of DJ Hero, and I mean I have an actual DJ controller. I play with it from time to time when I want to play around with my music to see how they mix. Well, speaking of music mixing, that harmonics game is on the horizon too. I mean, that's not really a DJ Hero game. It's their card game adapted for consoles, but I think people are going to have fun doing mashups with that. Anything with Carly Rae Jepsen songs is going to be a blast. Can you name anybody more perfect? I'll wait. Okay, I'm done waiting. Moving on, we also have Dark Tetsuya says, I've heard of it. It seems cool. I just need to get a hold of my turntable controller. And let's see. I thought there was another comment on that, but that's all I see in the moment. So, it sounds like a neat game to me. I'm probably going to check it out based on your email recommendation. So thank you for the email, AJ Twist. Appreciate that. Participate at orangeloungeradio.com if you want to send us an email for a future week. In the meantime, let's move on to some other stories. Loki.
Yes. So one of the other kind of digital things that they did this week was with Google Stadium making some more announcements about their console. So the Stadia Connect event, they did talk about some more games coming to the platform. So Works Must Die 3, which was supposed to be free with Stadia Pro. They did announce that Super Bomberman R Online is coming. So it's like a Bomberman Battle Royale game with 64 players. And then I want to say that they also had announced there's a new Harmonix game coming to the platform, which is kind of interesting. And then also Uppercut Games, which did City of Brass. And then Supermassive Games, who are behind Until Dawn. I'm curious to see how the Harmonix stuff works out, considering that it's going to really have to be low latency to do a music game. So
yeah, that's a pretty gutsy thing to put on a system like Stadia. But, you know, having played a little bit of Stadia in those first couple months, thanks to the Buddy Pass that Mr. Black Wolf gave me, I was playing things like Destiny and Thumper, I remember playing, which is kind of a music game. It's not quite as intense. I mean, I want to say it's not quite as intense, but actually it's probably more intense because of it's like a music horror game. But you know what I mean? Like the accuracy isn't quite, it's a little different. You have a little room for error in that game. But my point is, both of those games played pretty darn well, all things considered. So it's almost like, and has Harmonix developed a non-music game? And like, I think they did an iToy game. I think they did the iToy Skater game, but that was like 20 years ago. 15 years ago. It was a long time ago.
Yeah, I can't think of any.
Yeah, so now they could be doing something a little more like the Drop Mix Fuser, or whatever they're calling it on console. They could be doing something more like that that maybe doesn't have the strict timing, but it could be a very interesting flex for Stadia to have something that requires precise timing and it works well. And honestly, comments I've had about Stadia really aren't about the technology. The technology is good. It's a good technology.
It's, it's just gonna be like, all I'm saying is like, come Thursday, if even if like they weren't like Microsoft wasn't announcing, you know, free online or whatever, it's still a hard sell already when you've got, you know, their library, you know, hundreds of games that are part of Games Pass, and it's almost the same price as the Stadia cost. Plus, you know, I would trust Microsoft more with purchases than I would Google, just because, you know, this platform is relatively new. Google has the tradition of shuttering a lot of these platforms early on if they feel that they're not being popular. I'm having a hard time.
I know
that
these announcements, they want to make me believe that Google is going to, you know, invest in this for the long haul and so forth. And, you know, again, we still haven't even had the rollout of Stadia in the browser, boom, for everyone. I think many of us suspected we would have that by now. I don't know if COVID is to blame or some type of underestimation of the project is to blame or a combination of those things, whatever. Point is, we don't have it yet, and I think many of us thought we would. This announcement about Harmonix and the folks behind Until Dawn making games for Stadia, that is very exciting news. This is news we should have had a year ago when they first unveiled things. Whether they've been sitting on it or whether these deals were recently inked, I suppose we'll never know. But I feel like this news is going to get lost. This news is going to get really lost. Like you said, Microsoft's got a big event this week. Sony's got PlayStation 5. I feel like this news, without any type of footage or anything or something to really get us pumped up, is going to get lost. And people are going to forget.
Some of the other games that they're talking about coming to the platform are obviously games that have been out for a little bit already. So we have PGA Tour 2K21.
Okay, I'm going to stop you right there, because let's be real. Let's be completely real. This doesn't matter. Like, old games, and we're releasing shit that already came out a year or two ago. It's not going to matter. Like, is anybody going to be buying stuff on Stadia that they've already bought 2 years ago? No.
No.
And like, so sorry, I don't mean to disrespect you, Loki, or the news you're trying to read, but I think the reality is this news doesn't matter. And this is the problem the Wii U had, right? Out the gate, what are our launch titles? A bunch of shit from 2 years ago. So.
Right. And I just don't know how they make themselves relevant. I thought that with, you know, it's really, like I said, back when I was talking about choosing consoles, you know, it's really the exclusives that are going to bring you to the platform, and then having the vast library will kind of keep you there as well. I just don't see the exclusives for Stadia. It just seems like a fad, and honestly, by the time they get it right, it's going to be too late, I think.
Yeah, I'm really worried about Stadia from that perspective too. Like, we should already have the Stadia for everybody. I don't understand why we're still waiting on that. Because technically they're kind of giving out Pro for free, and because like you can get that trial or whatever and you can play it in your browser. Like, they need to stop making it like, oh, you're signing up for a Pro. They need to make it like you're logging into your Google account and it has Stadia on it. It's Drive. Like Google Drive or Google Docs or whatever. Like, it's just, and Stadia is one of those things, and you can just go. Like, they need to, you know, and I realize, oh, it could be a bandwidth thing. It could be like, we're past the time where it should have already been something that everybody can just easily access. Every day that we don't have that, Stadia is going to fall further and further behind. That's the reality. And these game announcements, especially the stuff that's years old that people have already bought or got for free. How many of the games that they've announced on Stadia has Epic Game Store already given away for free?
Quite a few. Like, the two of the games that they had on there were Hitman 1 and 2. I guarantee I have those. I'm pretty sure I've got those on multiple platforms already.
Yeah. And the Tomb Raider series, I'm almost positive, was free on Square Enix gave it away, I think, at the beginning of the COVID stuff. So my point is, and that's why I cut off you reading the list, is because these announcements don't matter. They don't mean anything. Most people already have played these games, or they're already in their library, and this is scraps, and Stadia is not going to survive off scraps. And it's a bummer, because, again, any complaint I've ever had about Stadia isn't the technology. If you actually go through the hoops to check it out and play Destiny 2, it kind of works, and it's pretty cool. But how long is that going to sustain the idea of
give Stadia money. I don't know.
Not at all for me.
Yeah, same here. Running out of time. All right. Well, one game that's managed to keep going for years and years and years is Minecraft, right, Loki? Minecraft had the right idea, right?
Yep.
So now I get Loki, you might have to give me some background on this because I'm not totally understanding like why this is like huge news, but it is circulating around game blogs and stuff, and that is that the Minecraft title screen apparently shows a world in the background. We all knew that. I always thought it was just a random fucking world each and every time, but apparently not. It's the same world every time, and they have just discovered this week, if you want to play in the title screen world, here is the seed. And there's actually two seeds. So spoiler alert. See, I would have thought the seed would have been something like Microsoft rules or something like somebody's cat name or something like that. No, no, the seed is 215190155396835274.
All of the seeds are converted to numeric. So whether you type in like Microsoft rules or whatever like that, it would still be, it converts it down to that.
Okay. That I wouldn't have known. So thank you.
So what they were doing is like, once again, it's a lot of time being wasted on this. So they had algorithms and stuff that they were trying to figure out what the seed was to find the world, and based on the generation that was there, chunk generation, and where the different objects were in there, and so they were basing that, trying to figure out how to find the actual seed that is shown in those screenshots. They did something similar not too long ago with PewDiePie with his seed that he was playing in his world because they wanted to play the same one. I don't know. It's time. People got a lot of time nowadays, and so just now you can check it out.
Just think, you could have found a cure for COVID, but no, you found the Minecraft title screen seed. No, I should look. I've spent 18 years of my life doing a podcast. I have no room to judge.
Yeah, it's the blurry image, and then they found the exact spot in the exact world to actually check it out. I mean, it's kind of cool that they were able to find that amongst the millions of levels or worlds that could be generated, and the versions. Now they'll just have to change the screenshot, and then we'll have to figure it out all over again.
All jokes aside, like the science behind it and how they discovered it is pretty cool. You know, we have to rib it a little bit because it's like all that time you spent doing X, you could have been doing Y. But the fact that they did use these kind of unconventional techniques to figure it out, and it's like this is what we want, and we're gonna find it. They found it. Good for them. Now go cure COVID. All right. Anyhow, moving on. Loki, what do you have for us?
So this is kind of fun. So there's a little indie game that someone made that's kind of like WarioWare, but with like a horror trope twist to it. So this game, Spookware by Adam Pipe, it's 10 micro games, so all themed around horror stuff. So it's different things like, moving the reader across the Ouija board, sawing a leg in half, finding the missing letters in like a Slenderman type of thing. And you use the arrow keys on your keyboard to play the game. And it's very authentic to WarioWare. It's pretty awesome. So what's great, though, is you can check it out. It is free. It's taken him 24 months. It's game a month. So he had created in a month. He's done this for 24 months straight, though. So it's his 24th one that he put together. If you want to check it out, it's papercookies.itch.io/spookware. And it looks pretty cool. You got to play it.
Yeah, I want to check that out. That looks really cool. Yeah. I love WarioWare, which is why I enjoy Super Multitasking by YYR. But no, seriously, I do. I love the WarioWare games. And so and that's always also one of those franchises where I'm like, God, I wish Nintendo would bring this back, because it's been a while since we've had one of those games. It's been a long while. And I feel like the last game we got was just a rehash of one of the old games.
Yeah, yeah. It's cool. It's funny, though, is they've got like there's some cheesy stuff in there. It's very much got the same like feeling of WarioWare game. Like, for example, the one where it's kind of gross, where you're like sawing a leg in half that's on a chopping board with a chainsaw, though, but you're sawing it like a knife. It's all, what's for dinner? And it's like, dinner is served. Yeah, or like funny. They have one they have another one where it's like a dark room. It's like, where's Nosferatu? You find his face and there he is. It's just like, it's silly stuff like that.
That's kind of fun. As long as it's like silly and comical and like, you know, and I've talked about this with horror a lot. I'm not into the very realistic looking horror stuff, but when it's like Disney's Haunted Mansion or like Elvira, like Darsaka went over earlier, like that macabre type of stuff, that stuff I think is great and I eat it up. I think that stuff is the Addams Family, like one of the all times greats. Yeah. I think that shit is great. Like that's awesome. It's the stuff that's like too realistic. So if it's like, it's where's really Nosferatu and it's cartoony and stuff, I think that would be funny.
Yeah, it's very much looks like a WarioWare game.
Okay, so, yeah, that's cool. I want to check it out. I will. That's cool. All right. Did you say it was free or is it a small?
It's free. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. That's even better. All right, one more free upgrade for owners of this game, and I feel like this is a game Loki probably owns.
I did it one time. I don't know if I still do. Let me check my Steam library. Find it.
Worms Armageddon came out over 20 years ago, and of course, the Worms franchise kind of came from those old tank war games from the '60s, from the '90s.
Those early PC titles.
When there was just zeros and ones and blips.
I used to play it on my oscilloscope.
You know. So from the 90s, things like, what was it? Tank Wars and Scorched Earth. Those are the games. Can you play
Back
Scorched
Earth? Back in my day, we played it with real worms real grenades.
We need to do, Loki, you and I need to play Scorched Earth on a live stream someday.
Yes, we do. That would be fun.
Can you even run it at normal speed anymore? Would it go like 100?
I'm sure they've got like, there's also Tank Wars and stuff. I'm sure there's an online version of that.
Oh God, I've got to find that. We got to make that happen some night. Anyway, but Worms was kind of like an evolution of that stuff, right? Where instead of tanks, it became Worms. And in celebration of 25 years of the entire franchise, developer Team 17 put out an update for Worms Armageddon on the PC. 7 years worth of fixes, changes, and improvements. The announcement was made on Twitter and Steam. There's a new 3.8 update for the 1999 release Worms Armageddon. And there's some of the fan improvements and fixes, some mod features, and are now integrated into the game. For example, somebody named Rubber Worm in the that's one of the mods, or the actual mod names. It was a popular Armageddon mod that lets you manipulate the physics and fire multiple weapons in a single turn. And so now that's in the official game. So that's pretty cool. That's a real neat fan love letter, is that, you know what? We're going to embrace these fan mods now as official canon. That's pretty cool. And we're seeing developers do that more and more. Like, we kind of saw that with the recent Doom re-release on like PlayStation 4 and stuff, where like the big user community WADs are like right there in the game and you can just install them for free and play them. I think that's really rad. So
yeah,
that I love this. Like the developers embracing the modding community like this is really cool. Can't wait for the re-release of Mass Effect. That's just going to embrace the high res texture mods that are already out there. We'll see. All right. Anyhow, pretty cool. I like that. All right. This is the part of the show where we're going to open up our chat room for any questions or any topics we didn't get to tonight. So if you have anything you want to bring to the listener roundtable, twitch.tv/VogNetwork, and Hype Mayhem's always like on it, ready to go. I love it. Hype Mayhem says, question, seeing that digital games are prevalent nowadays, especially on PC, are physical games, their cases, boxes, and any extras included, see special editions, have any place or relevancy nowadays? People used to love displaying their games and stuff on shelves for the longest time, but nowadays people love the freebies on Epic or the seasonal Steam GOG sales. Plus, there's the subscription stuff too. Has displaying your collection gone the way of the dodo? Excellent question. And one that comes up often on gaming shows and the community these days is like, are we really ready to go all digital? And I the simplest answer to this question is that there's just always going to be both. And you see a company like Limited Run Games, and we talked about them on the show a couple weeks ago. They're doing all these limited runs. Like that Shantae game on the Game Boy Color, that group is re-releasing, for God's sake. Like, they're doing a lot of physical releases. So there is always going to be a call for collectibles. And I've brought up this analogy on OLR before. It's been a bit, so I'll bring it up again. Well, not really like an analogy, but the fact that the physical games that you own
end up having equity, right? And mm-hmm. I don't like to go and buy games digitally unless there's some type of trade-off. Because essentially, if I buy digitally, I'm giving up that equity because you can't trade your digital games. So if Epic is going to give me a free game, well, shit, that's a good way to make me let go of equity. Give it to me for free, right? And so that's what a lot of people have done with their digital collections. And now things are getting to a point. I think there's a lot of people who are finding themselves more and more inconvenienced with physical media. For example, I think about Bobby Blackwolf and the setup in his house. Sorry, Bobby, I don't mean to speak for you, but if I lived in your house, I would imagine when I want to play games down there in that basement, it would actually be kind of a pain in the ass to have physical media sometimes. It would be much easier to just have games digital so I could kind of like flip between them there. Because like getting up to open the door that has the consoles in it and all that stuff might end up being a little bit of a pain. So you might give up your equity because you kind of know I'm never going to sell these games back, whatever, and that whole thing. But also something that's kind of driven me back to physical, like I was kind of at this point where I was like, I'm buying more and more digital. Like I just bought Animal Crossing digital. I popped Pokemon digital because I'm like, these are types of games that you just want to kind of always have available and you don't want to have to switch a cartridge in and out or anything like that. So, you know, like there's that. But then Alan got a Switch too. And now it's like, well, wait a minute. I don't really want to buy digital games because Alan can't play them if I buy them digitally. So now I'm back to, I want to get physical releases so that he can play them too. If he would play anything else besides Dark Souls and Animal Crossing, but that's what makes him happy. So whatever. But it does make me think, well, maybe he'll want to play Zelda someday, or maybe he'll want to play this other game someday. So I should probably get it on physical media. So there's that too. And Bobby does clarify, yes, I still like my physical media because of my data cap. That's a very good point, too. Marissa Mizell in chat. Hi, Marissa says, my internet connection is awful, so I still like physical, but I also like owning the product and not licensing it. Tiger Claw talks about shelf space. You might not have enough space to store all your physical media. That's why we joke about
I don't have any room for a shelf to have shelf space.
Well, and it's why we joke about Dark Sakura's vault, right? She has a lot of physical stuff from, especially from back in the day in the older systems. But at one point, there was literally an entire room in her house dedicated to it. That's how much space it took up. There's a very old YouTube, very, very old YouTube video out there on the channel, Orange Lounge Radio. If you didn't know, it's like very old, but we actually show Dark Sakura's old vault in one of the videos. So that's out there. DJ Rama S says, I'm okay with buying digital, but not when it's the same price as the physical release. Yeah, there's that. And that's the equity, right? Like, what am I getting digital, but physical, I'll have something that I could technically sell back or give out or, you know, trade or what have you. So I think the answer to that is really going to be different for everybody. And for me, it is, I'll go digital if there's a good reason for me to go digital. Otherwise, I still tend to go physical, especially with Nintendo Switch. Those cartridges are like itty bitty. They don't take up shelf space. I keep all the boxes somewhere, but then I have my little purse, my Switch purse, that has all my games in it. And it's not going to fill up anytime soon because those cartridges are itty bitty. So anything you wanted to add to that, Loki, about the whole digital versus physical?
No, I always thought I wasn't going to do mostly digital as well. But then, you know, that ended up being the complete opposite. So,
yeah.
Really, for me, a lot of times the sales seem to be more frequent on the digital stuff. And a lot of the stuff I get is also only digital, but it's also more convenient too. Like, you know, the local GameStop closed down over here. So, I mean, I could order from Amazon or something like that. But it's just, it's easier to know I don't have to worry about it coming in the mail. It's usually available 9 p.m. the night before it's supposed to release. So I don't see myself going out and trading in stuff as much as I used to. And even when I was, you don't get anything for it. And yeah, I know you could go sell stuff on eBay, but that's a hassle. So for me, it's just the time saved is more valuable than the money I might make back from selling something.
All right. I'll open it up to chat to see if there's any other questions. In the meantime, while we see if there's any other discussion topics, Loki, I usually open it up for any last minute stories you might have.
Yeah, so there's going to be a Dragon's Dogma anime series that's going to be coming to Netflix September 17th. So that's interesting, you know, considering that Castlevania has done well. I'd be interested to see how this one fares as well, but be pretty cool. I'm not very familiar with the series. I know it's kind of similar to, I think, Skyrim or an Elder Scrolls type of game, but I think aside from just, you know, the adventuring and the fantasy stuff like that, it probably pretty different. But
Azette is excited in chat saying, best game.
So yeah, it'll be cool. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, the success of things like The Witcher and Castlevania, man, it's going to make this video game stuff on demand services really explode. I'm so hyped for Final Fantasy 14 whenever they get that going. Like, obviously COVID has that stopped right now, but
you know, back in the day, you know, when it's like, oh, the video game adaptation, you know, now it's like, oh, hey, they finally get it now. They know how to do it right.
All right, I have to read this comment from She-Hulk in chat because it's the best reason against physical media. When I have a cat in my lap, I cannot get up to change the disc. Good thinking, She-Hulk. Marissa's telling a story about how iTunes removed some TVs and movies because the publisher, I guess, had pulled the material off of iTunes. So that is kind of scary, too, when the digital license gets revoked. Physical media is sometimes the only way you can kind of keep things. That's it's rare, but it does happen. I've heard of that with video games too.
That it's typically PT. Though. Well, that was a whole different thing.
Yeah, I know a little bit of it. Yeah.
Typically, though, when they're removing stuff off of a service, like they're just not selling it anymore, but you still have access to your digital copies. It's very rare that they ever remove it completely from your library.
Yeah, but I can understand not wanting to take a chance. I get that.
Yeah. Because that's happened a lot with different, like, I know Ninja Turtles, for example, has had it where the rights have gone away. And they've also done it with other things where they'll even mark down the game to, like, a ridiculously low price because they know that they're pulling the rights to it pretty soon. So,
Dark Tetsuya found a free version of Scorched Earth online. Can you tweet me that link, Dark Tetsuya? Because I'll lose it in the chat. So, thank you. I want to check that out. Okay, sorry, Loki.
I was going to say some other things, though, that we've seen is not necessarily, and that link doesn't work, is that not only do we have games removed from your library, but also like games altered, like, for example, Grand Theft Auto San Andreas and even Grand Theft Auto 4 have had like music taken out of the game.
Good call. The music change. Yeah, the license. Yeah.
And unfortunately, there's not much you can do with that with the games constantly updating. So, yeah.
You know, and that discussion is coming up again when we're talking about Xbox backwards compatibility, is that Microsoft will not commit to the full library being backwards compatible from Xbox One on Series X. It sounds like there will be some rare games that will not be backwards compatible, and it doesn't sound like it's a technology thing. It sounds like it's a licensing thing, like something in that realm. Like I don't know this for sure, but it is an example. Something like Rock Band 4, I could see where maybe they're not going to let that play on the new one because of like music and licensing and those types of things. Again, not that I've heard that game specifically, but I could see where, oh, maybe that's going to complicate it. It's interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Any other last minute stories for us?
No, that's pretty much it.
All right. Then I think we are good to wrap up and get our final thoughts out. Hey, I want to thank you guys for listening and participating with Orange Lounge Radio tonight. Thank you so much. If you liked what you heard here at the show, help us spread the message. We are the show where every gamer has a voice, but if the gamers' voices aren't here to put out on the air, then what can we do? Tell a friend or two about the show. Help us spread the word, because we are the show where every gamer has a voice. Again, I want to thank you guys very much for tuning in and listening, whether it was on the podcast feed or if it was on our Twitch feed. Either way, just thank you for being here and being a part of our Sunday nights. And I hope we made for some good entertainment on your Sunday night or Monday afternoon, whenever you're listening to this. Super appreciate it. My final thought for tonight is you guys didn't get to see it on the Twitch stream because the Discord is in the way, but I'll switch the shot real quick. So there's this little basket here on the couch, and I was really hoping, because earlier today, about 2 or 3 o'clock, Mr. Smush climbed up in this basket that I got from work and was sitting there. And actually, Smush was sitting there until like 5:30. It was about halfway through Bobby's show when he finally got up to leave. I guess he didn't care for the Bobby Blackwolf show. I don't know. It wasn't that. He'd been there for hours, and I think he knew his food thing was going to go off soon because it goes off at 6 o'clock. So I knew he wouldn't make it to OLR, but I thought I might get him for the Bobby call, but apparently, sadly, I didn't. So I was hoping he'd come back. So I'm going to hope in a future week. I'm going to leave this. So you might all be wondering, why is there a basket mixed in with all the video game crap that we have on the couch? Why is a basket suddenly mixed in? That is going to be the answer, because this is Smush's throne, and I'm waiting for him to come back and have a seat. And yes, I did tweet a picture earlier, and Tiger Claw dug that up there, so you can check out that picture if you want. All right, that's my very long final thought. Loki, your final thought.
Oh, I did remember there was one story that I didn't talk about, but it's kind of a given since there's a lot of other retailers doing this, but mandating masks. Apparently GameStop is going to be putting out notices on their doors saying that they're requiring masks in shop, but they're not allowing the employees to enforce that. So, you know, that's a thing, I guess.
It's a dangerous situation. Like, I can't believe I'm going to defend this because I fully believe people need to be wearing their fucking masks. But they're not paying those employees enough to deal with that bullshit. Well, I need to watch my words, because at the same time, those employees shouldn't be exposed to COVID in the first place. So I hope they have some type of glass thing set up like you might see at a 7-Eleven or something like that. I really, really hope. But at the same time, like, those guys just aren't paid enough to, like, fight with somebody and throw them out of the store and that whole thing. Like, people should just be decent enough to, like, wear their masks in the store in the first place. But
right. And yeah, there's a whole other situation. I mean, there was other stuff I saw this week, too, about talking about pre-orders and everything. And if you have games pre-ordered at a store and that store happens to close down, which a lot of them are because they're having financial problems right now, you're not getting your money back, or at least you're not getting your money back without quite a fight. So just keep that in mind when you're pre-ordering stuff, especially with brand new consoles around the corner, that they're going to keep your money unless you drag it out, and calling corporate's not going to do anything because you're just going to be on hold for hours without them picking up. They know fully well that they're doing this, and they just don't care, because what are you gonna do about it?
Yeah, the GameStop might want to clarify or clear up that policy before they do start, because that word's going to spread around social media fast around the time of one of the things that could be the only thing that keeps GameStop afloat for another year. So if I were GameStop, I would clear that up real fast, or they're gonna have some people decide to take that pre-order elsewhere. That's a scary thought, but I feel like their upper management is so dumb, they probably won't even think of that, and that is why GameStop is failing.
Yeah, so just be careful.
Yeah. All right, great final thought / last story. All right, that's it, everybody. Thank you, Loki. Thanks, Dark Sakura. Thanks you all for being here tonight. We'll be back in 7 days to do it all over again. Until then, have a wonderful night, everybody. Until next time, bye.
You've been listening to Orange Lounge Radio. Orange Lounge Radio is a production of OLR Studios. To join us for a live show, tune into VOGNetwork.com Sunday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. The views and opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff of Orange Lounge Radio or VOG Network, but you know they were all still true. See you next week.